the high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening or good morning wherever you may be in this great land of ours. Stretching from the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands out west, eastward to the Caribbean, south into South America, north all the way to the pole, and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm back. We had a wonderful time in Paris. For those of you who know and got to see the photographs, I did something that I thought was fairly revolutionary. I took along a digital camera, and I took along my laptop computer. And when I got to Paris, I checked into the hotel, managed to get a converter from European-style phone jacks to American-style phone jack, managed to get the international, or at least the toll-free number, it wasn't so toll-free, I guess the hotel charged me, otherwise toll-free from Paris through AOL, and sent photographs back to Keith of our doings in France. And there were many. It was a very relaxing, wonderful vacation in a country that is... France is a really unusual country. As a matter of fact, somebody sent me something kind of humorous about France that I probably ought to read to you. I'm going to have to condense it down a little bit about the French. They are a very interesting people, as you may know. Paris is a very romantic city, and we had a very romantic time. And I sent quite a few photographs back, and actually we did it almost every day, or at least every other day. I would send a whole new batch of photographs. So they're on the website now if you haven't seen them. Among the last photographs that we took, we went and visited the gravesite of Jim Morrison. Well, I'll tell you, it was about 20 minutes outside of the center of Paris by Metro, their rail system there. And I took a photograph of his gravesite and sent that. But altogether, I imagine I sent 50 or 60 photographs of our doings in Paris, got to Radio France International, and they let me come in and take photographs. I know a lot of you listened to Radio France International on shortwave. And so I was there, and there's photographic evidence of that and so much more. Sort of chronicling the vacation, if you will, in France. It's on the website at www.artbell.com. Welcome to WMTAM in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. 600 on the dial there, 5 kilowatts, and no doubt a regional powerhouse. Glad to have you on board. Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and I would imagine 600 on the dial. It just goes and goes and goes and goes, kind of like the signal of Kogo in San Diego. Now, there are a couple of things I would like to bring to your attention. One, an article this month in Penthouse Magazine about the program came out. Gigantic article in the new August Penthouse. You can read it by going to my website. I think we've got a link. Or you can go into a convenience store. Usually they have them stacked behind the counter, and you have to ask for them. But it's a very large 4-page article about the program in the magazine that most people claim they only buy to read articles. Yeah, right. Neat article, though. Really neat article. The Penthouse reporter was here the night we got the Area 51 caller, and the satellite went offline. You remember all that? Well, it's chronicled in there. As of today, or the issue that came out today, there is a full page about me and the show that we do here in Newsweek magazine, The Newsweek, which is entitled Strange Signals from Area 51. It's on page 62 of the new Newsweek, if you get an opportunity. Also a good article. Also kind of a neat happening. When the Newsweek reporter was here, it was cool because right in the middle of the interview, wah, 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 you hear this helicopter just screaming across the desert floor. And I said, come on. And I took this Newsweek reporter a very, very nice fellow outside. As a matter of fact, it's the Los Angeles bureau chief, Joshua Hammer, outside. And sure enough, there was this giant black helicopter. So that's kind of how he leads the article off. I guess he couldn't resist screaming across the desert, headed toward Area 51 at about 200 feet or so. CNN, while I was gone, of course, a lot happened, as it always does while I was gone. CNN has retracted their nerve gas story. You may recall I was somewhat skeptical of it at the time, apologizing to viewers and the Vietnam veterans for serious faults in its reporting. CNN yesterday retracted a story, well, this is now more than yesterday, alleging U.S. commandos used nerve gas to kill American defectors during the war. Now, there were a number of people fired, as you know, as a result of this investigation. One of those people is going to be my guest Wednesday night, Thursday morning. And we are going to talk about this story, and I think you're going to find a real surprise. His name is Jack Smith, and he worked for CBS for a lot of years, TV, and then CNN, and specifically, this was his last story before retirement. And he has some views that might conflict with the CNN retraction and apology, and so that'll be Wednesday night, Thursday morning, second hour of the program. Thought you might want to know. If you have a way to check it out, I'm getting all kinds of vibrations about eruptions and possible eruptions all over the place. A Montserrat, for example, in the West Indies, looks like it's getting ready to go again. They're getting a flow of lava there. They've got an ash cloud, an ash plume, and so Montserrat is erupting. In addition, you might want to know that there have been many renewed quakes under Vesuvius, and there are signs that it will erupt soon. Etna appears to be in some sort of eruption right now. That's right, Etna. So, and Popo, of course, down in Mexico. So times are interesting from a volcanology point of view. Very interesting. Just so much to talk about. Let's see if I can catch up on a lot of what has occurred while I've been gone. Of course, scientists reviewing reports of UFOs have conducted or will be conducting experiments and science because they have concluded that, get this, some sightings are accompanied by compelling physical evidence that merits further study. A 9-member panel said there was no convincing evidence that extraterrestrial intelligence was responsible for this physical evidence, but the scientists added that some of the physical evidence remained unexplained and researchers might learn something new in evaluating reported UFO sightings. Now, this is Professor Peter Sturrock, I believe, of Stanford University, and we will, of course, endeavor to contact him at some point and see exactly what he's got in mind. I saw, while I was in Paris, an interview with the professor, and he pointed, interestingly, to a specific case in Paris, France, a UFO case, fellow out in his garden, with quite a bit of physical evidence. So, all of a sudden, hooray, people are beginning to take this seriously. Matter of fact, here from Sarah McLendon is a little piece. As you know, Sarah is a White House correspondent that I have interviewed now several times. And her story reads in part as follows: pressure is building up for Congress to give attention to the controversy over UFOs. With scientists from Stanford, Cornell, Princeton, and elsewhere now, studying UFO evidence, controversy now being brought into the open, and heavy secrecy surrounding the subject is being lifted. Seminars on UFO evidence are being held periodically throughout the country, with laymen discussing the evidence without fear of ridicule. When about 30 members of Congress or their staff heard a briefing on UFOs in April of 97, Representative Dan Burton, chairman of the Government Reform and Oversight Committee, displayed some interest in the matter. This committee has received a number of letters on the subject, according to staff member Matthew Ebert. These letters are treated seriously, said Ebert, and we may well be on our way toward congressional hearings. So that is, I would say, very, very encouraging news, wouldn't you? On the AIDS front, not good news. There is a new drug-resistant form of AIDS. Matter of fact, two bad pieces of news. AIDS viruses have long circulated that they are impervious to AZT and other AIDS medicines, but now people are beginning to catch viruses that appear resistant to protease inhibitors, which have, of course, revolutionized the care of that disease in the past 2 years. But now they have the first patients, apparently, who have contracted a strain of AIDS, which is resistant to treatment with protease inhibitors, which means that for those with that particular strain, it is once again an absolute death sentence. And one other bad piece of AIDS news, they thought they had a vaccine. Now, they were testing it on monkeys, and unfortunately, it now appears that the vaccine given to the monkeys actually, within a few years, mutates into AIDS. So it's a big setback. There is no question about it. If you look at the development of new strains of AIDS and the fact that we now are apparently back to ground zero with respect to the possibility of some sort of shot or immunization you could take, that's one bad mama of a virus. There is no question about it. And it keeps fooling science. That's why I'm always very cautious when I read about some great AIDS advance they claim has just occurred. Oh, by the way, next hour, James Redfield, author of the Celestine Prophecy and the 10th Insight, combined in a brand new book called The Celestine Insights. Should be very interesting. It's been a long time in coming. So we'll take off and do open lines most of the night. I think James Redfield can only spend about an hour, unfortunately. So most of the night we'll leave in open talk radio, which is what I want to do anyway. And we'll get to all of that in a moment. Tomorrow night, Neil Slade, and you know what we're going to be talking about? We're going to be talking about people who are able, he says, to actually control the weather with their minds. That's right, control the weather with their minds. So Neil Slade, tomorrow night. All right, in the Mediterranean, Athens, Greece, scorching North African winds swept across Greece and Italy Friday, pushing temperatures as high as 113 degrees, killing 10. Temperatures were not expected to drop at all until the end of the weekend, and hospitals in both countries are on full alert. So there you are as the weird weather continues, and in case you were wondering, it's not just here, it's worldwide. Zoologists have discovered a mysterious new fungus that is killing the world's frogs and toads. Huh. You know all of the deformities that we've been having in frogs and toads? Well, they think an unnamed fungus that suffocates the amphibians by coating their undersides and legs could be the cause of a major decline in frogs reported around the world. Scientists do not know where the fungus came from or how it spread, but it has struck 10 species of frogs now and toads in 10 areas of Australia, 7 species in Panama, and 6 here in America. So whatever it is, according to the veterinarian pathologist, Alan Passier, of the National Zoological Park in Washington, quote, there is little doubt this is a worldwide phenomenon, end quote. So, rather interesting, I would say. We had a lot of people saying they knew what was killing the frogs. Well, guess what? They're wrong. Whatever it is not yet identified, aside from the fact that it is indeed some sort of fungus, some sort of crazy fungus. And when I heard this story, I thought, huh, you know, I've heard this before, a fungus. Now, I wonder where that could have come from. What do you think? Again, I would urge everybody out there to keep their eyes on the various volcanoes, and I mean around the world. We have either eruptions presently going on or a pre-eruption activity, you know, rumbles, small quakes, that kind of thing. So what I would say is watch very carefully the world's major volcanoes, because I think within days, that's right, I said days, you're going to see one or several of them blow their tops. That's just sort of an observation from me. We'll see if it pans out. Anyway, open lines are coming up in the next half hour. James Redfield at the beginning of the second hour. And then back into open lines again. We'll do just about anything you want on this night. I'm Art Bell, back from Paris with Ramona, all freshened up and ready to go. Don't touch that dial.
To talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye, from east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. To reach Art from outside the U.S., first dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
And we're about to get to open lines. So very much to talk to you about, because so much has happened. And I'll try and get to as much as I can. All right, you're not going to like this one. It comes from Linda DiBell, the Latin American bureau chief. A Dateline, Mexico City. Who or what is killing the doves of Mexico City? Title of the article is Dove's Swan Song Called a Warning Sign. For days now, hundreds of birds have been literally dropping stone dead out of the sky in various parts of Mexico City, and no one knows why. Speculation? Pollution? Pesticides? Maybe deliberate poisoning? Who knows? But birds, doves specifically, are falling out of the sky like crazy down in Mexico City. In a previous case, it was found that the bird's lungs had literally exploded, their words, exploded from environmental pollution. And you know, there is a lot of pollution. I mean, lungs ache and hurt in Mexico City. But can you imagine lungs exploding Can you imagine a level of pollution that would cause a dove's lungs to explode? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, Mr. Bell. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Had you heard the SOHO satellite has gone down?
Deader than a doornail. It's spinning, and they do not now expect to get recovery. So SOHO appears to be history.
Is that the only satellite we've got watching the sun?
Yep.
Man. Kind of makes you worry about Major Ed Dane's offices out there, don't it?
Makes you worry about it. Where are you calling from, sir?
Missouri.
Missouri. All right. Well, I appreciate it. Yes, you are precisely correct. SOHO is dead as a doornail. Something else had occurred while I was away. Now, they are suggesting it was a malfunction in some sort of thruster. In other words, when they went to do an attitude correction, a valve stuck open or something happened and SOHO is now tumbling out of control. And yes, it is presently our only space-borne look at the sun. Very surprising development. I wonder if we know the real story about what killed SOHO. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening.
This is Alan calling from Junction City, Oregon.
Yes, sir.
While you were gone, the drug war is heating up.
Yep, figures.
Internationally.
Yep.
Let's see, a couple of things. In Uzbekistan, they're using a former chemical and biological lab to produce the agents that they're going to use to spray the whole world to eradicate opium, coca, and marijuana.
Yeah, I know. I've heard about that. I bet a lot of it comes out of U.S. labs.
I imagine. Have you heard of the Terminator gene?
Oh, no. There is a cute one.
That's a good name, isn't it?
The Terminator gene? First-time callers, area 702-727-1222.
Variant that allows the plant to not pollinate, and what it does...
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's
It is something that is being produced to cause plants not to go to seed.
Right.
And for the seeds to be useless. Now, why do you think they would be doing that?
Well, you know, it makes me wonder if all of it isn't just being run by aliens and that actually we're under some kind of chemical warfare, you know, long term.
I know it's a scary proposition. I'm trying to imagine why they would want to prevent. In other words, I guess they want control of the industry. If you give somebody seeds that will not reproduce seeds, then right, they've got to come back to you next year to buy more seeds.
And one of the big international corporate deals is that, you know, to copyright or patent all the different seed types.
That's good. Let's patent seeds.
There you go.
That's great. I appreciate the call, sir. He's exactly right. He's exactly right. They are indeed coming out with new seeds for wheat or, you know, whatever. Seeds that will not produce seeds that will reproduce themselves when planted into the ground. Can you imagine that? They are going to intentionally do this. Now, why do you suppose they might do that? And what if there were some sort of extinction-level event or near-extinction-level event, and the only thing you could lay your hands on would be seeds that would grow for one season and one season only? Think about it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, Art. This is Gene from Seattle.
Hi, Gene.
Back in May, I sent you some information concerning a man by the name of Benjamin Krem.
Oh, yes.
And he is a disciple of a master who, in Krem's particular task right now, is to spread the news of Maitreya.
Channeling, right?
No.
It is not channeled information?
No, it's not. He has a telepathic connection with his master, but he does not channel his master per se.
Sounds like channeling.
No, it's not. anyway,
what is it then?
Well, he's able to just communicate telepathically like we would, you and I might have a telepathic communication. In other words, his master conveys certain information to him, but he doesn't channel it, such as taking on a personality or something like that.
Okay.
And the whole idea behind it is that he is talking about the presence of Maitreya, the emergence of Maitreya into the public arena.
Yes.
Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. So I just thought it might be an interesting...
Maitreya might be here. The Antichrist might be here. We might have all kinds of distinguished visitors.
Yeah, I just thought maybe an interview with Benjamin Krim might be interesting because...
Well, send me his number.
Well, it's in the information I gave you with the... he's got his website and that information. He can be reached through the information provided on the website.
All right, I appreciate the call, and I'll see what I can do. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, Art. This is Matt in Minneapolis. How are you?
I'm just fine.
That's good. Say two quick comments. Number one, I hope you enjoyed your trip with Ramona in Paris.
Twas great.
That's great.
Did you see any of the photographs?
I caught a couple of the photographs. I didn't catch all of them, though,
okay.
I'm sorry
to
say.
About 60 up there.
I know it. There sure are a lot. Say, another quick comment. Dateline NBC tonight ran a segment on the Truster.
Did they really?
Yes, they did.
Cool.
And it was really interesting. I was watching it, and they said, tonight, the Truster.
Damn, I missed it.
And it was so incredible. It was just so incredible. They checked into the accuracy of it. And interestingly enough, they interviewed three people. Richard Nixon, Susan Smith, and Mark Furman, of all people.
Mark Furman.
And it was just, it was incredible.
How did Mark Furman come out?
Apparently, he was reliable on the Truster.
I thought so.
Can you believe that?
Oh, yes, absolutely, because I interviewed Mark Furman.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah, I did a 4-hour interview with him.
Wow.
And I didn't need the Truster to hear in the man's voice the fact that he was telling the truth.
Wow. That's pretty incredible. And I thought Art had that on a couple of months ago, and I thought I might look into it.
I know. Well, we're glad to lead the way.
Exactly.
You take care.
Thank you very much, Art.
Bye-bye. And again, you're not going to want to miss Wednesday night, Thursday morning. One of the reporters fired for airing the story about an alleged sarin nerve gas attack on U.S. defectors is going to be here speaking about whether there should have been an apology, whether in his view, since he worked on that story, an apology should have been forthcoming, and his view of why the apology occurred. You're not going to want to miss that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Lord.
Hi.
I'm so glad that you're back.
I'm glad to be back. Turn your radio off, please.
Okay, I just got it. I had to stall there until I could.
There you go.
I'm calling from Pennsylvania. My name is Joe.
Hi, Joe.
I'm listening on WILK.
Right.
And I have a couple of questions about... I'm thinking of getting a portable shortwave receiver.
Right.
And I already have a Sony 2010, but I'm looking for something smaller. I'm going to be coming to Nevada in August. And I would like something a little bit smaller for the suitcase, but something that would still work well. The two I'm thinking of are possibly the Sony 7600G or the Sandian 909. But I can't try these out. And I know you're a collector of radios, and wonder if you've seen both.
All right, I'll give you my opinion. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Sandian 909, and I'll tell you why. I, too, have a 2010, by the way, a hell of a radio.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of years have gone by since Sony produced the 2010. And while it is very sensitive, there are a couple of things about the 2010 I have a real problem with. One is the minute you put a long antenna, you know, a gain antenna outside and attach it to the 2010, it goes into overload.
Right. It even does that with the wire inside.
I know. And now... that is not true with the 909. The 909 has as much sensitivity without the overload problem. Now, I can't comment on the other Sony model you named. I haven't tested and fooled with that yet. But But I can tell you that the 909 is right now the best radio on the market.
What about upper and lower selectivity for sideband? Can the 909 do that?
It has, again, very important distinction. It has individual upper and lower sideband filters. It has resolution in sideband to 40 hertz.
Last thing, quickly. I'm a blind person, and I would love if you could, I don't know if you would do this, but if you could get your books available on Talking Book.
Well, The Art of Talk, the first book, which is now coming out again, I might add, is already available on audio, and The Quickening is going to be available shortly.
Through the Library of Congress?
Have no idea.
Because we have a free lending program, and we can borrow books through that library. And
right. Well, I can tell you, I'm telling you it's out. Now, I don't know if it's in the Library of Congress yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Well, thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, and take care. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Art, how are you?
I'm very well indeed.
Oh, great.
And I'm happy to be back. I missed it, you know?
Oh, man, we missed you too. Hooked on your show. Listening on KST Sacramento.
Yes, sir.
Actually, Rancho Cordova. Hey, listen, you had a guy on your show, his name was Sean, I can't remember his last name, you called him the Prophet?
Oh, Sean David Morton.
Sean David Morton, yes. Listen, I have a question. I've listened to him a couple times on your show.
Yes.
I tried to get through, couldn't. He said at one time that he thought that Clinton would be the last elected president. I never heard his reason why.
Well, I'm not sure he gave one.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I don't recall his saying that exactly. He said Clinton would leave office for health reasons,
right,
and we would get Gore.
Yeah.
Clinton would not finish out his term.
Uh-huh.
So we would, of course, then get Gore.
Get Gore.
To finish the term. But I don't know about last elected president. I don't think he made that prediction.
Okay. Fantastic guy.
Very interesting, yes.
Yeah.
All right, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you, and take care. Wild Card Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Well, welcome back, Art.
Thank you.
Outstanding website, guy.
It is something, isn't it? Well, that's the doings of Keith Rowland. I just
yes.
contribute stuff. Where are you?
This is Cliff, Clear Lake, California. Catch you on KKOH or K-Free in Fresno, depending on which way the wind blows.
Yeah, isn't it a fact? Anyway, what's up?
I especially enjoyed that overlay you had on the tourist information going to France. You bet.
I tell you, the French are a strange people. I'm going to read little parts of that to the audience later, I think.
If people that don't have a computer, I mean, they're really going to enjoy this. But anyway, Art, been a pleasure talking to you, listening to you for years. Used to be a little north of you up there in the Lodi Valley in Nevada.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, sitting on a hilltop and listening to you out of Vegas. And well, there's going to be a lot of people who want to talk to you, so I'll get out here.
All right, you take care, and thank you very much for the call. It is good to be back. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Guess you got to punch the button. Let's try this again. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello there, Art. This is Fritz from Phoenix.
Well, hey, Fritz.
Well, I just want to make a quick comment about the scientists. They are seeing the light, finally. There was 9 members of and spent 9 months to study the subject, and they say there was no convincing evidence to support the evidence of extraterrestrial intelligence. I would suggest all they have to do is listen to Coast to Coast nightly, and they get the light.
Well, I'm sure that some of the interest has come from here, and that's why the study is going to occur. I'm sure we pushed it a little bit, Fritz.
I think the computer internet has something to do because you get an international panel, but somebody is winking, so they finally, it's like putting the big toe into the water and see how warm it is.
Yeah, I know. What do you think happened behind the scenes?
Well, the public's awareness is coming to such a speed now. Your radio program, it's been copied constantly. There's about 6-8 shows like
that. Oh, I know.
And so the awareness is rising. And they have to, because more and more young scientists are coming on board now. The Carl Sagans are gone, and the young scientists see the light, and they say, hey, there's something to it, let's work together. But again, everything is government-sponsored, so they have to wait till the cue comes, till somebody snaps the finger.
Well, something happened, Fritz, and I'm glad to see it. It's a good thing.
Thank you.
Take care, my friend. And with regard to a lot of shows popping up like mine, yes, I know. And that's fine in one way, and in the sense that imitation is the sincerest, you know how that goes, right? But I'm a little bit worried from another point of view. As you know, Rush Limbaugh had great and is having great success with the style of talk radio he does. And the moment that worked, everybody out there decided, God, let's copy. You want to be successful? Let's be like Rush Limbaugh. Let's see if we can be like Rush. And so we had a million Rush wannabes out there. We had shows like After Rush, and it was Rush, 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 Rush. And Rush is great at what he does, but a lot of people who try to copy him are not. And I want talk radio to be a very diverse thing. And of course, I'm very thankful for the success I am having, but I would hope that people would not assume it's the only road to success in talk radio. And that I was talking to a New York Post reporter about this earlier in the day. I sincerely hope that talk radio kind of gets its act together and remains innovative, because formats that are not innovative eventually die. And so don't copy somebody. If you're out there and you're a potential talk host and you're going to get into the business, come in with something of your own. Be original. That's your best chance to be successful. If you want to copy me, go ahead. All right, coming up after the top of the hour, James Redfield, who wrote the Celestine Prophecy. It should be a very interesting hour. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
In the Kingdom of Nye on the Wild Card Line at area code 702-727-1295. That's area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
I don't know. I think we may have broken the chain. We'll find out more about that. Coming up in a moment is James Redfield, the man who wrote the Celestine Prophecy. Been a long time in coming. People have been telling me to get him on the air now for about the last 3 years. Tonight, for an hour, he's here. So all of that up and coming, there is a great deal of information I have to give you about my trip to Paris, things that occurred while I have been gone, and there's just been a total bevy of activity. So we'll cover all of that in the successive hours. So much to talk about, so little time. Coming up in a moment, James Redfield. Huh. James Redfield is the author of The Celestine Prophecy, The Tenth Insight, and The Celestine Vision. He writes widely on the topic of human spirituality, and is active in the worldwide effort to save our last remaining wilderness areas. He lives with his wife and cat, Meredith, in Alabama and Arizona. The cat is Meredith. His wife is, how would she pronounce that, James? Is it Sal or Sally?
It's Sally.
Sally, all right. For 2 or 3 years, people have been telling me to get you on the program.
Well, I'm glad I'm here. I've been a big fan, Art. I think you do a great job.
Thank you.
Disseminating information and carrying on the conversation, which is something that I think is very, very important right now.
All right. I understand somebody sent me some email and said that in your in a recent interview, or I guess perhaps in your newsletter, I'm not sure where, you had mentioned Gordon Michael Scallion and the ECR and the big spiritual wave that is occurring. And I interviewed Gordon recently, And indeed, he says that that may modify what he sees coming, that if there is enough spiritual conversion, it may modify whatever timeline for earth changes lies ahead. Would you agree with that generally, or why did you write about him?
Well, I definitely think that's true. You know, I think that earth changes are something that are seem imminent to some degree. And, you know, we've got so many prophecies out there, you know, some of them very, very old.
Mm-hmm.
Nostradamus, through Edgar Cayce,
mm-hmm.
Now in Discalion, and then we have the same range of, I mean, very old predictions from the Native Americans, especially the Hopi, and you had some of them on, I think.
I did, yes, indeed. Back. That's right. Hopi elders.
So, to me, I really felt like, because there's so much about earth changes in the air right now, and I do feel like perhaps we're going to see a lot of activity, I think, as you do. But my take on it is that because almost every one of these prophets have said that we can do something about that. You know, if we turn around, I mean, all we have is these vague terms, turn around, repent, get in touch with the sacred, stop abusing the earth, mm-hmm. and so forth.
That something could be done.
Something could be done, and I think that that's certainly my belief. And one of the things is that I'm interested, I think, in getting out there equally with the prophecies, and that is that what I think now is that we do have a framework of understanding for what it is that we have to do in terms of re-entering the sacred, turning it around, repenting, that sort of thing.
All right.
We have a framework for that. I think we now know where we have to go.
I do too. But on a slightly more pessimistic note, if I look at whether, while I do see a large, relatively large percentage-wise move toward the spiritual, I see a larger percentage, I'm afraid, going in the exact opposite direction. Would that be your view?
Well, I think there's a great polarization happening out there. So yeah, there's a movement to the poles. At the same time, you have a lot of people who are withdrawing from the materialistic rat race and looking for quality in their lives and looking for the sacred and trying to find meaning. We seem to have this rush to materialism what I call the disassociated society, you know, away from the earth, you know, into the electronic worlds and into the materialistic approach to life, and you know, it's both those things are happening. So I think there is a great polarization occurring.
Are we too wealthy? I mean, America right now is in the middle of boom times. The stock market's over 9,000, 9,100, I think, today. A lot of the baby boomers are near millionaires. They're going to be retiring very well. There's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of materialism out there. Are we simply too damn rich?
Yeah, I think that we hold the status that comes from money too highly. You know, I think that there's nothing wrong with money. I think that the world's really designed for there to be great abundance. But we can't be abundance that's not environmentally compatible. And I think that's our problem. I think that so many of our corporations, for instance, are going in the direction of short-term profits and not looking ahead and not estimating environmental costs and that sort of thing. And that's, I think that's what the Native Americans mean when they say we're corrupted in terms of our
corrupted is right
to the earth.
Yes, you must have heard that show. All right. There are, I could sit here and list, and I will not do so, a million warning signs with regard to the environment. Delays came in tonight from Mexico City, where doves are falling, hundreds of doves are falling out of the skies, just flat dead, and scientists have no idea why. Or the frogs, there's this new thing that has arisen that's killing frogs now worldwide, and first they thought they knew why. Now they are puzzled, and they only know it's some kind of fungus. There's just a whole lot going on in the environment that seems to be saying, do something soon or else.
Well, there's no doubt about it. There's a huge wake-up call going on out there, I think both environmentally and socially. You know, the problem with children, the problem still in poverty centers around the world. I do think it's a wake-up call, but you know, the question is, will we answer the wake-up call? And I think that's, in a sense, I think that we're reaching that crossroads right now.
So do I. What do you think the structure is? You mentioned it.
Yes.
For a return to a more spiritual connection with Earth.
Right. Yeah, I think that it has to begin with each individual, and I think if what I've sought to do with my work, both the Celestine Prophecy and the Tenth Insight, and as novels, and the Celestine Vision, which is a nonfiction book that was out last fall, I've really tried to create an understanding of this framework, and I think it begins, as I said, with the individual, and it comes back to a perceived new state of awareness that I've defined as synchronicity or an alert expectation, and it has to be based on a connection. Experiential connection with higher self, and with a sense of waiting for guidance and watching for the synchronicity and using intuition to guide our actions. Now, you know, that we've heard before, but what I'm trying to stress, I believe, is that this is a state of awareness that can be achieved, and it has to be practiced. One has to wake up in the morning and find that state of mind in which it's alert expectation, in which one's the events of the day respond. In other words, if one expects a synchronistic happening to occur right outside one's door, as one starts one's day, it's that sense of watching and waiting that opens up to this experience. And I think again, each of us have to realize, number one, that experience is available, and then number two, go looking for it and try to find it and do everything possible to get in that state of awareness and stay with it, because that's the state of the sacred. And I think there's something about the energy of that awareness, and many, many people being in that awareness, that heals the disruptive energy that I think mass society has created.
All right, here's what worries me. Let's see if you can respond to this. I agree with you completely. I see that there is a move toward this spirituality understanding among some, but the forces allied against it would appear to be insurmountable, and by that I mean oil companies. By that I mean simple human nature. People want homes, they want VCRs, they want a couple of cars, they want a couple and a half kids, they want. Those are very, very powerful forces allied against the kind of spirituality that we're talking about. And so I have some pessimism about whether we're going to make it.
Well, yeah, the only thing I can say about that is that we don't know which way the balance is going at this point. You know, I think I'm a little more optimistic than you, in the sense that I think that two people in this kind of consciousness outweigh the thoughts and the activities of hundreds that are in ordinary materialistic consciousness, and I think that we can turn this around very quickly. I'll tell you a quick story.
I'm involved with a group in Washington, a lobbying group called Save America's Forest.
Right.
And there was a the Republicans, the people who like to sponge off our national forests, both Democrats and Republicans, got together and they decided that they would create a new bill and try to push it through Congress, saying that that the multinational corporations, the timber industry, go into our national forests and cut in places, and much of those places, unspoiled virgin forest, ancient forest, and be exempt from all environmental laws.
Mm-hmm.
That means being able to clear cut right up to the salmon streams and so on.
Sure.
And they really thought that they were going to be able to get that through Congress. And for all the world, it looked like they were going to. One person, the Save America's Forest, remembered that there was a particular environmental group that had not been contacted directly. And he went, and this particular environmental group had not taken a position on clear cutting in our national forests. And it was one person went to the head of this organization, sat down, laid out the issue, and talked about the damage that was being done, and the fact that almost all our ancient forest is gone. And really, that person was so moved that he put a directive out, just a memo out to all the members of that organization. And one of the people who read that memo was a Republican, a moderate Republican, who was so moved by the memo, he defied the Republican leadership, Newt and all the gang, and said, no, that's not right. And he was actually, has been before, the leader of the moderate Republicans, and they rebelled against the leadership and defeated that bill. Now, what if that one person at Save America's Forest had not thought to go talk with that, with the individual that headed that environmental group?
You make a very good point. Political revolutions have been traditionally...
And if one person following one intuition and deciding, you know, maybe it's too late or maybe it won't work, but I'm going to go give it a shot. And, you know, if there's millions of people out there that in their particular occupations,
sure,
their particular professions, they say, wait a minute, this is wrong. Here's in my occupation, this is bad for the earth, it's bad for humanity, it's bad for future generations. I'm going to take a stand against that. If there's enough of us that do that, I think this thing can be turned around.
Well, as you point out, and as I began to say, political revolutions have been accomplished with very small percentages of population, so maybe spiritual revolutions can be accomplished also with relatively small percentages of the population.
Yeah, well, I think that is possible, and I think that it's, you know, what I like to say is that we have the high ground, and if we really communicate it earnestly, and, you know, corporations are just made up of people,
mm-hmm,
and if there's enough people that are on the fringe of that corporation or in the hierarchy somewhere of that corporation, they can change the policies. And sure, it's, you know, the forces lined up, you know, that are
pretty powerful.
They're very powerful, and they're operating in a sort of a habit and an inertia of a certain way of doing business. But it can be turned around, and I think that there are a lot of polls out there now that are showing that, you know, the greatest trend, one of the greatest trends right now is the movement toward quality. People leaving corporations, starting their own niche businesses.
It's true. And so forth. It is true.
And you know, also people within corporations are doing different kinds of things and I think making an impact.
Why, speaking of impacts, why do you think that your first books, novels, had such a tremendous impact on those who read them? What is it about those novels, after all, that affected people for such a long time in such a profound way?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because the book, you know, Self-Seen is really still a book that's circulating all around the world.
Oh, I know.
Right now, and moving into different, more and more countries, and it's, I've always been most observant of the fact that it's always been a pass along book. And it's moved through this, through this culture and now through the world.
I know.
Just one person saying, hey, this is a book that speaks about something and passing it along. And it wasn't done with publicity or anything. And so that the reason, I think, is because it describes the spiritual consciousness that we're moving into. And I think the more we can understand and sort of grasp it in our hands, sort of, and have real experiential models for it. The easier it is for us to wake up in the morning and say, "Ooh, I'm going to take a different frame of mind. I'm going to take a different approach to my life." And I think that's what I try to do in that book is to really describe what I think is already happening out there. And
so, through the power of a novel, you were trying to send a message to the real world.
Well, I was trying to describe what we're doing in a way that would maybe bring it further into consciousness, and I think people respond to that. I think that it's the next step in our spiritual evolution is to move out of this sort of 400-year-old materialistic outlook.
All right, we'll pick up on
spirituality.
We're right at the bottom of the hour, so we'll pick up on that as soon as we get back. James Redfield is my guest. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Have a fax for Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. Send it to him at area code 702-727-8499. 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now, here again is Art.
Once again, here I am. James Redfield, author of Celestine Prophecy, is here and much more. Actually, he's got a new book called The Celestine Insights, which is the Celestine Prophecy and the 10th Insight together in one special edition. We'll tell you about that in a moment, and we'll review a little of the volcanic activity going on right now. Well, all right. A listener in San Diego, James, says that in your book you stress there are no coincidences. Right now, the Montserrat volcano is erupting. Right now, they just issued a warning down in Mexico about Popo, which apparently is getting ready to erupt. They've actually told people now to stay away from the crater completely. Etna and Vesuvius are letting go. A coincidence?
Oh, absolutely not. I think that it's, as we said before, a real wake-up call. Whether it's because the weight of the negative human energy is such that it's creating these earth changes, or whether it's a natural cycle that we have to deal with. I think the wake-up call is, and the message is the same. We have to center ourselves, get back in touch and in alignment with the sacredness of all things, the earth, our lives. No coincidence about any of this. I think that the rougher it gets, the more people that are going to be moved to looking at all this spiritually. And as that happens, if we spread the word enough, I think that we can survive this and come out with something that's even better.
If you had to make a guess about the nature of all this, in other words, as we get these increasing earth changes type warning signs, whether we're headed toward one grand moment of, I call it quickening, it doesn't matter, it's just a word, one grand moment of the beginning of the earth changes, or whether we sort of approach it slowly, and then the counterforces, the spiritual counterforces, just hold us back from it, hold us back from going over the brink, or how does this cycle work, do you suppose?
Well, I think it's going to start slowly and build, and I think that how we react to it will determine much of how bad it gets. And again, it's just the power of one individual shifting not just their opinions, but how they really live and the amount of time that they spend in prayer and in meditation and in sharpening their perceptions of synchronicity, of intuition, of being guided in what they should go do every day and who they should talk to and that stranger they run into by coincidence who they strike up a meaningful conversation with who then might go off and really impact the head of some major corporation that's doing something negative.
A lot of people have kind of come to the conclusion with our current political process that they cannot make a difference. There are a lot of people who have given up on voting and the whole political process because they think it runs without them and they have no effect on it.
Absolutely, and that's a shame. And you know, everybody is, but see, that's up right now. The very fact that that's the case is coming into consciousness, and I think that's going to be the impetus to do something about that. I think what we're going to have is new networks of people getting together and creating huge blocks of votes that they can then go to Washington with and say, you know, here are, you know, 100,000 people that believe this and you know, want to stop clear cutting on our national forests or want to stop the illegal dumping that's still going on in the oceans and want the environmental laws really enforced instead of everybody looking the other way.
Have you done a lot of world travel?
Not a lot, but some.
Well, this is a very rich, fortunate, blessed, materialistically anyway, country.
Yeah.
At the moment. And when you travel a lot in the rest of the world, particularly in the third world, they're working as hard as they can, including in China and elsewhere, to have what we have.
Yeah.
They're on a giant drive to have what we have. And if they get what we have, we're doomed.
Well, that's the great paradox. And
isn't it?
I think what we have to do is use our riches to make a greater difference in the world and to really try to make an impact in other cultures so that they don't make the same mistakes that we made. And again, I think government is not going to, you know, we have this idea that, well, that Clinton's supposed to go do that.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. It's not ever going to happen, you know, unless groups of people get together and go out and do it. But again, I think that's what's up right now is action, you know, groups getting together and saying, let's do something in our community, let's do something, you know, let's form networks that can then go pressure politicians to do what's right, and that's going to happen. You know, it's already happening, I guess I should say.
Well, I suppose even the most cynical go-along-to-get-along politician occasionally looks at some of the news today and scratches his head a little bit and says, hey, what's going on with the weather? Or, uh-oh, isn't that important that part of the ice cap in the Antarctic is breaking off or notices things?
Well, you know, they'll be the last to notice that, really.
Well,
but what they will notice
is pressure.
It's pressure. You know, is 10,000 people on a petition in their state. I've done some lobbying lately, and to a person, what the staff of these politicians will tell you, and the politicians themselves, is that hardly anybody writes and hardly anybody emails. And when they get 10 people in their district that's worried about one particular issue, they take notice.
It's true.
And it's you know, it's something that right now the opportunity is great for groups to get together and go do something. And see, I think another thing that's very important here, you know, we talked about the polarization You know, I think it's very important that we not divide, you know, use the wrong categories to divide in people into the bad guys and the good guys. You know, institutions are stuck in whatever kind of activity they're stuck in. The people that are involved in these institutions and corporations and so on are just, you know, caught up in an inertia. But most of the people in these organizations realize there's something wrong. They can turn that culture around, I think, very quickly, just if a few heroic individuals in these places stand up and really make a case for what's right. And that's especially true, I think, in politicians. I think, if we have a couple of models, they'll come forward and really start creating an aura of honesty and talking very openly about the influence of large corporate contributions on their on politics in this country. You know, that people really reward these politicians with the honesty, and out of that will come hopefully a turning around of politicians and what we think of politicians.
All right, let me try this one on you. Celestine Prophecy is about a Peruvian manuscript that disappeared, with great secrets about who we are and what we are and all the rest of that. So let me ask you what you think about human origins, James. Do you think that we know the whole truth about our origins, or do you think that is still going to be revealed?
Oh, I think I definitely think we don't, you know, that the official history is totally wrong. I think that part of our spiritual renaissance, as Edgar Cayce, I think, believed, will be to rediscover these roots. And I think the problem is that we have to have a certain spiritual sophistication to even understand the details of this early history.
In that quest, is government our enemy?
I think there are forces involved that protect the status quo very, very actively.
Let us say that government, for one reason or another, got its hands on a document that would be very, very controversial and provocative and cause lots of trouble in religious communities and socially and all the rest of it. Would they release that document, or would they put some kind of stamp on it and buried it deeper than the Kennedy report?
I think they would try to hide it.
Yeah.
I think if the Vatican got its hands on it, it would try to hide it.
You bet.
I think, you know, large institutions coming from a lot of different places, if they got their hands on that information, will try to hide it. And I'm sure there's a lot more information out there about our early origins than that's being hidden now. But I think, again, it's, you know, somewhere there's a heroic individual who'll have his mind changed, or his mind will change. It's deep within some of these organizations. That'll begin to leak this information. But see, it won't come out, in my view, until we ourselves reach a kind of state of awareness in which it makes sense. In other words, I think there are a lot of abilities that people had in early civilizations that we've totally lost.
No doubt.
But until we sort of sense, you know, since what an intuition really is, and since intuition's coming to us in our own consciousness and beginning to let these intuitions guide us, and then trying to interpret the synchronicity that happens, and we feel that and experience it to some degree, only then will it make sense what we might learn about an early civilization that could do that very well.
But a real spiritual revolution threatens the very power structure that exists and runs all, you know, keeps the trains running on time. It threatens all of that. So if it would begin to manifest itself in greater numbers, wouldn't there be official movement against it?
Well, but that's, you know, there's only so much that can be done. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, the greater the numbers of people that embrace, you know, a new kind of consciousness, it takes a suspension of civil liberties to stop it.
And that couldn't happen.
Well, it possibly could happen, but the thing about it is it won't happen as long as if there are enough people in every place that's coming to this awareness. So it's like in Russia during the coup, you know, when they tried to they tried to suppress the drive toward democracy. At one point, the soldiers and the tanks just refused to drive.
That's right.
And that's what can happen in any of these very negative, fearful institutions that comprise what we might call secret government. You know, they can get it. They may be the last to get it, but they can get it. And I think it's important to hold that vision. You know, I think all this discussion about, you know, the secret government and what's us against them is very, very important to get the information out. But then after that, it has to be, hey, these are souls just like us that can be reached through prayer and can be reached through a kind of positive, you know, energy force that we can beam to them. But we can't do that if we say they're enemies. You know, we have to say they're souls that can turn around and help us save this thing.
I've seen it happen. I've actually seen it happen. I think you know Danion Brinkley.
Yes.
He's a good friend. And as a matter of fact, he also is one of the people who said, you got to get him on, you got to get James on. I watched a man who should have been dead a gazillion times over, somehow, through the power of prayer, a whole nation praying, revive. It was unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. So, you know, I don't know that I fully understand the source of it, but I sure do understand the power of it.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's interesting now because there are a lot of, there's a lot of science, not a lot, but very significant studies are happening right now that are going to really shock the scientific community. I mean, there's some big time studies on the effectiveness of prayer, and not just within the field of health, but in terms of solving problems and creating abundance and all those things. I mean, what we're going to be able to see, I think, in the next few years is a real scientific wave of documentation that shows that our mental attitudes and our intention, the way we practice it consciously, has a great influence on the world. I mean,
science is very slow to come to this.
Well, absolutely, and people will fight and scream about it, but more and more of us will then be able to say, wait a minute, look at this study, look at that study. You know, science is on our side here. You know, we can believe in this, you know, that our attitude and our beginning the discipline, taking the time to prayerfully meditate toward problem areas in the world, in a particular way, you know, that's not that's characterized by love and the energy of that it's going to happen. It's something we can do.
There are many who even believe that the power of the mind or minds can actually control the weather, and it's not unreasonable. The weather, mountains, volcanoes, earthquakes, all sorts of things. So, would you consider that? Acknowledge that might indeed be possible?
I think we have to, I think we have to build to that. You know, I think where we are now in terms of our, I think the power of prayer depends on the power of our spiritual connection.
Indeed.
And you know, there's groups out there that are greatly powerful, and I think they can do, they can do great things. I think they're hampered by the rest of us because, you know, skepticism is a kind of negative prayer that just kind of permeates everything.
I know. I hear a lot of it.
And I think that you know, we're going to have to build to this, you know. Can we you know, turn the sun, make it go back around the other way? Can we stop the earth from spinning? You know, maybe in some great ideal nirvana, but I don't think we can do it now. What we have to do is concentrate on specific areas, small things that we can do.
Help. Like getting them to stop cut down trees.
That's right, in peace in areas. You know, we had a when it looked like there was going to be war with Saddam.
Yes.
You know, Marianne Williamson and Neil Don Walsh and myself, we had a prayer vigil in Washington, D.C., and people from all over the world joined us, and we really had an intense moment in which we tried to focus on Baghdad and on Saddam, and just by coincidence, it was during the trip, we planned this, not knowing this, but it was during the trip that Secretary General Annan, in which he had gone to Baghdad, he was there when we, at the moment we were having this prayer vigil, and another person who's an interesting fella, Jimmy Twyman, who's a musician who wrote a book called Emissary of Light, who did a lot of work in Bosnia. He's an interesting person. He believes very much in prayer and in being and changing the climate in which conflict is happening.
The fact
happened to be in Baghdad.
The fact that we didn't go to war, I thought, was a miracle, and I also thought the U.S. government was quietly and profoundly disappointed.
Well, I think you're right. And I think that, you know, I mean, let's face it, you know, a lot of that is target practice.
Yeah.
You know, and it's arms race stuff, in my opinion, you know. I mean, but it's, you know, it's also, you know, has the potential for great harm.
James, an hour is a very short time, and it's and it's gone. It's gone. It's not enough time. So what do I do? Can I get you back, or?
Well, let's go a little further.
All right.
I'll stay with us.
Good, because you brought up just a wonderful example. Stay right there. James Redfield, author of The Celestine Prophecy and much more, is my guest. And I guess we prevailed upon him. He'll be right back, as will we.
Talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. Now again, here's Art Bell.
Once again, here I am. James Redfield is here, author of The Celestine Prophecy. And now the 10th insight. Now together, by the way, in a special edition, we'll tell you about that. Do you remember the last walk up to what was going to be another Gulf War? We moved the machines. We moved the men. The press cranked it up and said, we're about to attack. The U.S. government said, we're about to attack. And then we didn't, because Kofi Annan went over there and there was a miracle. Well, there may have been a reason for that, and that's what we're discussing right now with James. Back to it in a moment. All right, back now to James Redfield, a long time in getting on the air with us. Welcome back, James. You mentioned the Gulf War and what happened there, and I really agree with you. I saw absolutely no way out. We were going back to war. Everything was ready for it, and something happened. More than just Kofi Annan and going over there, something changed suddenly. I have no idea what it is. You do.
Well, you know, let me tell you a little bit about what we tried to do with that. we announced that there would be a moment, a 10 minutes of prayer. We sent out a description of what we thought was important to hold in that prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was for all people involved. You know, the leaders of all the countries in the world that were poised, and Saddam. And what we tried to hold there was that you know the sort of defensive posture, the character armor that created this conflict or created these negative intentions,
right,
would lessen. You know that we could beam love in all seriousness into that situation and into everybody involved to the point where they would go, well, you know, maybe I'm not so angry, or maybe I'm not so set in this path because of pride or whatever, or alliances or hidden agendas or whatever was operating. And just uplift them in that sense, not characterize them as evil or see them as you know, negative forces, but see them as fearful, defensive kinds of forces that were poised to go into conflict, and try to lessen that with our vision. And I think that you know, again, that's, I believe, what the science is showing, that rather than to pray against someone or against any one position, pray that the best outcome happen, that the, you know, the most truthful movement occur,
and
all the people be raised into sort of a higher awareness in which they're more capable of seeking real solution.
All right. Let me ask you a tough question, and it did happen. What do you think is the power that allowed that to occur? In other words, I'm asking you the big G question.
Sure.
That or something, some inherent ability that we have always had, the power of our own minds, or all of the above, or what?
Well, I think that. You know, isolated human beings operating from ego, we're not very powerful. I think our power comes from a connection with higher self that really is a union. You know, we go higher and higher into higher self until we unify with the creative force, whatever we want to call that, the force operating underneath the universe. And I think you have to have some experience that is real, I think, to make that connection. But the evidence is in the experience. You know, if in meditated states, you know, we can really connect with a higher part of ourselves, you know, a self that's more intuitive and more wise and feels different, so that our egos have to expand and we have to go, wow, you know, this self I just discovered was greater than my ordinary memory, you know, or my ordinary sense of identity.
Do you believe in a creator in the biblical sense?
I believe there's some creative force behind the universe and that's operating within all of the universe. Do I believe in a little old man with a long beard? No, of course not. but I do think that the evidence from experience, and I think the great masters of the East, you know, have finally, you know, all that information is finally integrated into Western culture, so that we can, maybe for the first time in the last 30 years, we've been able to really conceive that there, you know, we can think of some other way of conceiving God, you know, that there is an experience that we can discover that feels like a higher connection that would give us evidence that there is something to connect with in a higher way.
You believe there's life following, or an existence following this physical life?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I think that, you know, again, there's a lot of evidence about that, and, you know, the naysayers say that, well, it's just random firings of dying neurons, but
yes.
But you know, I think that the stronger evidence is that the similarity in the experiences and so forth would show us and give evidence that there is a very rich afterlife, and I think there's again a body of evidence that one can discover.
This is going to get to a very, very controversial question, which I can't resist asking you. You believe then, obviously, we have what we loosely term as souls, something that continues after the physical life. You've already said that now. With that in mind, and I'm agreeing with you, there are positive and negative forces at work in the world right now, and occasionally the positive forces, as we may have seen with the Gulf War, can certainly prevail. There are about 1.5 million or more abortions per year in the U.S. Do you think that is a great negative force?
I don't know. In some manner, we have to learn to control, to take over the decisions about population growth. I think that the Pope's stance against birth control, for instance, is short-sighted. I don't claim to be inside his inspired mind. I think it is an inspired mind. I think that where he comes from is that that all creation must be in the hands of the divine source, and we shouldn't interfere with that. But I think that's a short-sighted view. I think that where we're headed is to intuitively know and be responsible for how we bring children into this world. Because I think one of the things that's happening out there is that we're learning a new spiritual view, connected with the evolution and conscious evolution of how to bring children into the world and how to bring them into a consciousness, a spiritual consciousness, not just a way to function materially in the world.
Well, I agree with you with regard to abortion. I don't know in my own mind, I'm not particularly comfortable with the concept of abortion, but I'm also sensitive to how many people are on Earth and will be shortly on Earth.
Yes.
And it seems to me that a religious policy against birth control is insane. In other words, why force people into the abortion decision? Why not prevent the occurrence in the first place? And the Catholic Church, of course, is right up front in causing this problem. What in the world do we do about it?
Right. And I think that certainly everybody would prefer that there not be any abortions in the world. I mean, I do believe it's very violently interfering in a soul coming to the earth. But I think that, it probably is a negative force on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right in the sense that we have to move toward birth control and toward more conscious and more responsible sexuality as a way to prevent abortion. I don't think we can legislate it into abortion.
Do you believe in a God, large God, who is a vengeful God?
I don't. I do think the structure is set so that, if we get into a place where a deep fear, where our actions are violent toward other people, that karma is a real thing, and that those kinds of actions have a spiritual consequence.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't come in the afterlife, it comes right here. And in terms of the quickening, I think karma is very, very rapid right now. I think if you go out and you negatively try to manipulate people or you try to bring them down,
comes back real quick.
It comes back very quickly right now. And I think that is the quickening, and it's just more of a wake up call. It's coming to us right now. Understand karma. And get your actions straight is what the message is.
That's an interesting view, and I haven't heard anybody say it before. A lot of people listening to you will go, gee, what a bunch of New Age gobbledygook. And then there will be another large segment out there who will understand perfectly what you are saying. And I hope we're going in the right direction with more people beginning to understand what you're saying, if not fully consciously, beginning the subconscious realization that things have got to change or else.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a time that we didn't have these kinds of discussions. There was a time when we felt like the negative attitudes and the scoffing and the the ridicule was too great to even have this kind of conversation. And but I think that as I wrote in the Self Envision, most recent book, and is that the scales have tipped now, so that the materialists, the skeptics, skepticism is good, don't get me wrong, but the extreme skeptics are now on the defensive, because as I say, I think the evidence, experiential evidence, and the new science is now on our side. There is a spiritual reality going on this planet.
Oh, there's all kinds of things happening that haven't. For example, at several of our major universities announced while I was in France, all of a sudden, we're going to study UFOs. All of a sudden, those people that were laughing and chuckling are now quieted a bit. And mainstream science is saying, okay, let us study this. Or in the case of the power of our own minds, for example, there are wonderful studies being done showing now that our minds can actually affect, for example, a random number generator in a computer. They're proving these things, as you point out. Now, mainstream science is beginning to move, so something is definitely changing.
That's right, and the information is getting out there in wider and wider circles. I think that Dr. Larry Dossey, I just want to mention his name for the listeners, because he's his books, I think, really document this, the science behind prayer and all the new science around prayer and intention and mind-body medicine. He's really good at documenting this. I really would recommend him as someone to explore. I also want to give our website out. I forgot to do that.
We have a link up, you know.
That's right, and it's selfesteemvision.com, and we'll try to also have what's going on out there in terms of people getting together and having networking and starting to have these intentional prayer moments in which we really try to beam some positive energy into situations.
Yeah, I can tell you try to remain very positive. So let me ask you this. Do you have days when you listen to the radio news or turn on the television news or read the newspaper and you go, we seem to be losing?
Well, sure. I mean, I think we all do. I would not suggest that we've turned the corner yet. I think it's still a challenge. I still when I talk about it, I say, whether we do turn the corner may depend on one or two people that are undecided right now. And so there's a certain urgency, I think, about this, especially with what we know about the Earth activities.
Do you have any opinions about how much urgency there is?
I think there's a lot, and it comes from every direction. It's not so much about whether we're going to lose Miami and San Francisco and the West Coast right away. And I don't know that's imminent. But we're losing kids out in the inner city every day, and we're losing species all over the globe every day. And the ozone layer just gets thinner and thinner every day.
I know.
And that, there's an urgency to act on that, and I think it's pushing at government, pushing at corporations, and again, only individuals can do that. You know, every you know, right now there's a million people probably out there listening who have an urge inside them that says, you know, within their field or within something they know about, you know, this little voice is going, somebody ought to do something about that.
Dead on the money.
And I think, boy, it's so important that each of us heed that call because, you know, I mean, life is short. Why not take a stab at doing something that makes a big difference?
If not for yourself, then for your children.
Absolutely.
Because they're the ones who will inherit whatever we leave them with. You know, it's all fascinating. I have a copy here, a signed copy, which I'm very proud of. Thank you, of the Celestine Insights, the Celestine Prophecy and 10th Insight together in a special edition. Is that available?
Now that's an edition that Barnes and Noble chain did. So at the Barnes and Noble stores, you can get that copy that includes both the Celestine Prophecy and the 10th Insight. But the most recent book out is the Celestine Vision, and that's, you know, I wrote the two novels, you know, the parables, I guess you'd call them.
Sure.
That's what I call them. And then I took a time out and did a nonfiction book called the Celestine Vision, in which I really tried to express very directly in a nonfiction way all these issues and where I think we're headed and what we can do about it.
Is that available nationwide?
It is available everywhere, yes.
Everywhere. The Celestine Vision.
Yes.
Non-fiction.
It's non-fiction.
I was going to ask how you came at this suddenly from two books that were sort of a warm-up that were fiction to a non-fiction book.
Yeah. Well, you know, I really wanted to discuss the ideas that I wrote, you know, within a story, within parables in the first two books, in a very direct way, because I thought that so much discussion about the insights, and again, my work is really trying to chronicle the movement of consciousness.
All right. Well, listen, bottom of the hour, James. You want a little more?
Sure. Let's go.
All right. Good. Stay right there. This is Coast to Coast AM. James Redfield is my guest.
Kingdom of Nye. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again is Art.
Well, all right, back now to James Redfield. And James, I've got a tough one for you here in a moment. But first, you mentioned earlier skeptics, and I deal with skeptics all of the time. It's part of my life. And what I've noticed about skeptics is that there are healthy skeptics out there. In fact, I like to even consider myself a healthy skeptic. And then there are rabid skeptics. And when they encounter the kind of material you've been talking about tonight, they get angry. They get really angry. Do you encounter that bunch?
Well, you know, I really don't. I mean, I think I must travel in circles now where it's pretty much among people who are open. You know, they may not have a frame of reference, but they truly are open to the possibility of spiritual reality that they can explore. And but you know, I get some letters, and you know, I know I hear other stories, especially within various professions of people running into, which into people who really are just paradigm bound. You know, it's not even really a healthy skepticism. It's just a reliance on, well, that's on common sense when the common sense is behind the times.
All right. Well, here's let's see. He doesn't say where he's writing this from. A fax of getting a million faxes. This one says, "Dear Art, I have a copy of Celestine Prophecy near my night reading stand and bookcase. I read it, and I find it to be New Age gobbledygook. Several friends think it's great and want everybody to read it. This is not my feeling at all. It is a perversion of what is and what will be. Why it has appeal is a mystery to me. It takes the new and unknowing in the wrong direction and provides a fluff foundation." They wrote this with a lot of anger. It goes on. I won't go on. But that's the kind of reaction I'm talking about.
Well, yeah, just to a person like that, I would just say, hey, you know, just leave it on the shelf, and maybe later on look it over again, and it may sound a lot different.
Well, it may, or it may not. It's hard to say.
But, you know, I'm an optimist, so.
I can hear that. Listen, I did a show not long ago on synchronicity, and it is a fascinating, fascinating topic. What's your take on synchronicity and its importance?
Well, listen, I think it's the main measure of whether one is open and has stepped into spiritual consciousness or not. Because what happens is that once we leave the world of sort of a materialistic Newtonian Descartes view of the world, Cartesian, I guess is the way to express that view of the world, in which chance is just chance. Things that happen have physical causes, but no other causes, and events that happen simultaneously have their own causation or just happen together by pure chance. Once we leave that world and step into the world where we're open to the mystery of life and open to the fact that there may be something going on that guides our lives, and this is very comforting, by the way. I mean, the old Cartesian view of the world is that it's us against this violent nature, and we have to use our egos to force our way in the world,
right,
and win. Once we leave that, though, and get to a place, it's very comforting when we can realize that we aren't alone. We aren't just thrown on this planet and have to fend for ourselves. There's a higher process, if we're very alert, that will lead us in certain directions that will open us up to a whole different world in which we grow into our full selves, discover a mission that we can perform.
Mm-hmm.
That's a state of consciousness that we might even call the synchronistic consciousness. It's been worked out philosophically. Ken Wilber has, for those folks out there who follow philosophy, has worked a lot of this out in terms of stages of consciousness in which we're stepping now into what might be called the transpersonal realm, and bringing and moving all of culture into that, so that we're creating a spiritual culture in which we use intuition. We use the whole, we integrate the right side of our brains, so that we rely more on as much on intuition as we rely on logic. And people who don't understand that, or those who don't try to understand that, can seek to dismiss it out of hand. But again, the my view is the scales have turned. Those are the people that seem unreasonable now.
Well, let me tell you a little secret. I have, and this is not a secret, I have a lot of prophets on the air, like Gordon Michael Scallion and endless others that I could name, who prophesize scary earth changes, doom, polar reversals, you name it, we could go on and on.
Sure.
And I take a lot of hits from people saying, my God, that's negative stuff you're putting on the air. However, it is my personal view, and I don't think I've ever said this before, that the dissemination of this kind of information leads people to begin thinking about the process that is ongoing, and that they had better jump into it or else. And so I think rather than being negative, the net effect is actually positive.
Well, I would agree totally. Art, and that's why I'm a big fan of yours. I think that you handle topics that there's almost no forum for otherwise. And it's such a service because it's so important to have this conversation. Because the more you converse about it and bring it in fully into consciousness, you know, the more people can say, hey, dude, there's something real here. You know, this is not just New Age gobbledygook or whatever the guy called it.
Right.
You know, it's not just woo-woo. You know, it's not just somebody fantasizing or whatever some folks think we're doing. It's a real philosophical stance. It has its own basis of evidence that one can consider very seriously. And the more open we are in discussing it, the more people can see that evidence and start to explore it seriously.
Well, that's exactly right. And so I really wonder, James, why, since what I'm doing is beginning to have this effect, the powers that be allow me to remain where I am. I puzzle about it.
Well, you know, I think, Art, that you represent a force that's protected. And I think the protection, comes not just from this realm, but another realm. I think that your notoriety now also protects you, if you follow my reasoning.
Maybe it does. Maybe there was a threshold point
in
the development of this program. Uh-huh. And once passed, maybe you're correct. Maybe there was a kind of a protection. I don't know. I've often puzzled about it myself.
Oh.
And anyway, we seem to be in a lot of ways headed in the right direction. I just hope we can get there fast enough. That's my hope.
Well, and I think that again, that as long a great part of what you're doing is, again, as you say, showing that there's a certain urgency and showing that the way that we have to react is in a spiritual manner. All the great traditions, I mean, all the great prophets all said, as we started the show talking about, that we can lessen the severity of the consequences if we will turn ourselves around and become more spiritually aligned. And again, I think that we can now detail the experience that's possible that we can get into that is turning around. In other words, each of us can turn around better, I think, at this point because we have a structure for that. You know, we know that it's trying to find a spiritual consciousness in which synchronicity happens, in which we're connected to a higher self that has intuition and wisdom that we never thought we had, and to have faith in that and to follow it into a sense of mission. See, I think that what happens is that when we get into this state and we start to observe the synchronicity, the synchronicity always is leading us somewhere. It's always a window of opportunity that if we step into it, there's another synchronicity and another window of opportunity. We step into that, and it moves us right into a position where we can do something to make a difference, and we recognize it. And it's what I really tried to describe and illustrate in the 10th Insight. You know, we're all here, in my view, with a mission. And you know, if we feel like our lives are flat and we don't like our jobs and nothing's going well, and what can we do about it? Well, what we can do about it is find a path of inspiration.
You bet. Change it.
And it's not forcing it. We have to wait for the synchronistic opportunity to come by. But no matter where we are, I'm so convinced of this.
All right. All of what you've said would seem to suggest something about the nature of time. Have you done much thinking about the nature of time itself? In other words, it must be, if what you believe is true, malleable. It must be malleable, the very nature of time, the past, the future particularly, must be malleable. It must mean that we can change it, which means the nature of time is malleable.
Oh, I definitely think it's malleable. I think that the things can happen in less time than our ordinary way of thinking would lead us to consider. You know, I think that it's set up. But see, my view really is that the world is a theater upon which and the whole system is created so that our best dreams can come true. In other words, we can discover our dreams and then watch these dreams happen if we get on a path where we're open to guidance. And again, that's quite a mystery that you know, you can't convince anybody of until they've had that experience. You know, they've had something. They've tasted the mystery where they walk into this consciousness, and then a few coincidences happen to them, and they realize, hey, there's more going on in this world than we ever thought. And again, though, this is the consciousness, in my view, that is the the return to the sacred that will lessen the earth changes, because out of this consciousness comes a more respect environmentally, more respect socially for others, more consciousness of the consequences of our actions, both collectively and as individuals. You know, and that's what we have to get into, I think, to lessen the kinds of real traumas that have been predicted.
Well, it has to happen, as you mentioned, at the individual level. Now, there are more people than not who hate their jobs, hate their life, hate their career, hate going to work, can't wait for the weekend, and all the rest of that. Now, I was once there. I radio has been a passion all my life. I got out of radio. I built a cable system. I sat there like the Maytag repairman with a whole department below me. I was bored. I hated it. They gave me a chance to come back into radio 14 years ago. And my wife at the time thought I had lost my mind. I took a gigantic pay cut, and I said, the hell with this. I'm going to go do what I want to do, what I feel I'm destined to do, come what may. And I quit. You know, this great benefit package and all the rest, gone. My wife thought I was nuts. It obviously worked out. But it's got to, in that way, happen on the individual level, and more people have to begin making that kind of choice, don't they?
Absolutely. And there's a couple of keys, I think, that are important to talk about. One is monitoring our interpretations. In other words, when events happen that we would consider negative, you know, maybe it's a brick wall that we run into, maybe a business we tried failed.
Right.
Whatever it is, there's going to be negative challenges. And if we look at those as negative, they're going to be just that. But the key principle, I think, in staying on this path is to interpret every event positively. In other words, to find the silver lining, because I think in every event is a message to go in a different direction. You know, sometimes you have to start all over. Sometimes you have to just amend your project in one way or another.
Right.
Sometimes you have to get rid of one group of friends and find another group of friends.
That's right.
There's always a message there that's positive. And, I know for some people this sounds just like more positive thinking stuff, you know, that they've heard over and over again. But all I can say is that if you embed yourself in the mystery, and when any event, even traumatic events, you know, find the silver lining, take a step in the direction that message suggests, and the synchronicity will then continue, and you'll find that defeat was nothing other than a preparation for something better that's coming down the road.
Well, you really know, people know, they have an inner voice, call it intuition, call it whatever you want. They know, just like they know with what's going on with respect to the earth right now, they know, but many choose not to listen. A few do, and I'm finding those who seem to succeed and be happy individually are the ones who have learned to listen.
You know, there's no doubt about it. I mean, we're guided in this life, but we have to wake up and really pay attention to it.
Well, I think, though, for a lot of people, they're stuck in a situation where the noise level of the days with business or family or all the things they're involved in is so high that they're just not listening to anything else.
And I think you're right. And I think there's a void that people feel, and we all feel it at some time. And I think that's a very important sensation. It's a very important perception. What we do with it, unfortunately, too many times is, you know, we try to find it, buy a new toy, or we find a new hobby that just distracts us for a little while, or whatever it might be. But it's a distraction, something to make the void go away. It's the source of all addictions. Everything from sexual addiction to drugs to materialism to all the rest. It's all a cover up for trying to rid ourselves of this spiritual void that we should be listening to, because that's the source from which the synchronicity consciousness we're talking about leads.
Do you think that there is one part of the world or parts of the world that are leading the way more than we are here in America right now in the Americas?
You know, I don't know. I think that part of our free-flowing creativity, you know, negative and positive, in America really sets the stage so that we can practice this sort of creative flow that is the spiritual consciousness we're talking about. So I think that we do it very well here. I think there are certainly other cultures that also do it well. I think there's a real spiritual renaissance happening across Europe and in South America. Some cultures have a harder time breaking away from the more institutionalized religious approaches, and I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying that the more creatively free we are, the easier it is, I think, to find our own individual path.
You're not a big fan of institutional religion.
You know, my take on it is that, the religions are here to stay, all of them.
Oh, yeah.
But they're reforming themselves within right now. You know, there's, you know, just because of the acceptance of the self-seeing prophecy, I think you could say there's evidence across these religions that they're open to a more actively spiritual infusion, so that they're talking less about doctrine and more about the actual experience of spirituality. And I think that movement's occurring in every religion, and I think that sooner or later, the religions and people that adhere to one religion or another are going to really say, be able to look at other religions and say, wow, there's something we can learn from all these religions. And in the end, we're going to take the best of all of them and out of that find a real common understanding of what the spiritual life truly can be in the world.
Well, listen, my friend, you have done double what you said you would do, and I sure do thank you for it. And one day I would like to have you back and do some open lines and let people ask you questions.
I'd love that, Art, and it's been a lot of fun. And again, thanks for your work.
Thank you.
It's important. I'll try to especially keep you informed about any other prayer attempts that we have in terms of focusing people's intention on trouble spots and that kind of thing.
But please do.
We're gonna see more and more of that. I mean, it's something that's ready to happen. It's something that we can unify around and be able to really.
All right, James.
Show that we have power.
That's it. We're out of time. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Art.
Good night, James Redfield. Thank you.
To talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S., first, dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. Or call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
It is. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and there certainly is something going on. We'll tell you about the volcanoes shortly. An amazing thing worldwide. Are you surprised? Well, we'll get to that. And open lines. We're going anywhere you want to go now. I just spent 2 hours with James Redfield, Celestine Prophecy. A productive 2 hours, if you were listening. All right. As you know, I'm now back. This is my first night back. God, it feels good to be back. You'll never know. I miss it. I really miss it when I'm not on the radio. I don't know. It's a sickness for me, I think. Hey, listen, there are a couple of interesting articles on the program that just came out, this program. One of them is in Penthouse, and it is a really, really extensive four-page article in Penthouse, you know. I mean, everybody says they get Penthouse for the articles, right? So they'll be reading mine. It's in the August edition of Penthouse, just out, I think, on the newsstands now. In addition, as of today, well, yesterday now, Monday, there was a full one-page article about this program in Newsweek magazine. Yeah, Newsweek, huh? So that also is on the newsstands right now. The Newsweek article is called Strange Signals from Area 51. And it was written by the Los Angeles bureau chief, Joshua Hammer, who was actually here one day. So if you want to read about the program, you can do it in Newsweek, or you can even do it in Penthouse. Kind of interesting. All out, all at once. Boom. Also, talked to the New York Post earlier today, and there'll be an article out next Monday on the show, too. So how about all that press, huh? Whew. All right, look, coming up Wednesday, I'm going to have, you all know about this, when I was gone, well, before I left, the story broke, CNN Time news story, about the alleged gassing, the sarin gas, of our own troops. And then all of a sudden, CNN backed down from the story, apologized for the story, and fired some of the people involved in the story. One of those people was Jack Smith. It was really a retirement kind of deal for Jack. He worked on the story, and it was to be his retirement piece. And let's say that Jack does not fully agree with backing down from that story. Jack believes the story is true. Jack will be here Wednesday night. You're not going to want to miss that. And we will question him very carefully about the story and about why CNN and Time backed down from the story. There is a story in the New York Post indicating that CNN backed down after taking heat from Henry Kissinger and retired General Colin Powell. So Wednesday night we're going to get to Jack Smith on the air, and I would like to add, by the way, thank you very much to Ian Punnett of WGST in Atlanta, who helped me line up this interview, a very, very important interview. That'll be Wednesday night. Tomorrow night, Neil Slade, and we're going to be talking about the power of the mind, possibly the power of the mind to actually control the weather. Neil Slade claims that he can do it, As a matter of fact, more to the point, he claims to have evidence that he can control the weather, that you can control the weather with your brain. Think you can do that? Now, volcanoes, worldwide, trouble. This just in, the majestic, I call it Popo because I can't ever pronounce it, volcano in Mexico, is apparently showing signs that more explosive eruptions could occur soon. They are warning people now to stay away from the crater. The 18,000-foot volcano could produce eruptions like those earlier this year, which sent ash miles into the air. And so they are warning people there. In Montserrat, after months of silence, Montserrat's destructive volcano erupted on Friday morning and sent superheated gas, ash, and rock plunging into the sea. Now, Etna and Vesuvius and Pele are also now becoming active. Early warning signs? Well, you may think them warning signs, or you may not. Interesting story here. It's entitled, let's see, Dateline Mexico City Doves Swan Song Called Warning Sign. What do we mean by that? Hundreds, I repeat, hundreds of birds, doves, have been literally dropping stone dead out of the sky in Mexico City, and nobody understands why. Now, when this previously occurred, they did autopsies, and later it was shown the birds actually, you're not going to like this, had their lungs actually exploded from environmental pollution. And there is a lot of that in Mexico. And then one other little weather-related item. I was just in Europe, as you know. By the way, I had a fabulous time in France. Thank you. I'm actually now, I think, a soccer fan. 1 week in Paris, and I'm a soccer fan. I'm watching the Coupe du Monde, the playoffs, very intensely and enjoying it. I never believed I could be a soccer fan, but it's infectious. You get to Europe and, wow, that's all there is. Life is soccer. Soccer is life. And it is interesting once you get into it. Athens, Greece. Scorching North African winds swept over Greece and Italy Friday, pushing temperatures, get this, as high as 113 degrees, killing at least 10 people. And one more item I've got to get on concerning frogs. Zoologists have, you know, they thought it had something to do with the snake virus or something or another. Wrong. Zoologists now have discovered a mysterious new fungus, underlying fungus, that is killing the world's frogs and toads. They think the unnamed fungus that suffocates the amphibians by coating their undersides and legs could be the cause of a major decline in frogs reported around the globe. Scientists, I'm quoting now from the Reuters news story, do not know where the fungus came from or how it spread. But it has now struck 10 species of frogs and toads in 10 areas of Australia, 7 species in Panama, and 6 here in America. So there you are, a new fungus. Okay, folks, open lines now. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi there.
Hi.
My name's Tal. I'm in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Yes, sir.
I'm just calling because of actually a vision I had about a year ago.
Okay.
It's along the Terrence Mechanic kind of line.
Okay. chemically induced.
Yeah, that would be it.
Yeah, okay.
It was during a lightning storm, and three of my friends and I were looking up at the sky, and the lightning flashed, and we all saw Jesus.
All of you at the same time?
All of us at the same time.
Now, that is impressive.
There's something odd about that, though.
Or, how did it, well, it depends on how it happened. Now, were you all standing around, blasted on what substance, what were you on?
Psilocybin.
Psilocybin?
Yeah. We were all on a watchtower looking at the sky.
Uh-huh. Well, now, is it one of those things where some one of you said, oh, my God, look.
Yeah.
And then the other said, I see it too?
Uh-huh. And
well, see, you've got to imagine that could be chemical.
the one thing we found really odd was it actually seemed like we could see through the cloud cover, and there is this amorphous blob, a clear blob. I don't know how to explain it, feeding off of it, and that was Christ. I don't know how to explain it. It is
well, that's quite all right. You don't need to, sir, and I appreciate your call. And look, there are many avenues to experiencing things that one might experience in an altered state. So one has to be very careful without advocating the use of psychedelics. You have to admit that that is one possible avenue. And I do. Interesting news story earlier today. They have now learned that there are some non-psychedelic, underline this very important part of the story, non-psychedelic aspects of some components in marijuana, which have wonderful medical application in Alzheimer's and many other diseases. Now, I stress the non-psychedelic active part of marijuana. Nevertheless, I have heard, I don't know how many talk show hosts, ignorant suckers during the day today, slamming it and suggesting it's the pro-druggies doing this. They obviously did not listen carefully to the story. The non-psychedelic part of the drug. Now, this doesn't mean people are going to be smoking marijuana to take care of their potential Alzheimer's or anything else. What they're talking about is extracting that portion, which does not provide, I repeat, does not provide a psychedelic experience, and using it for valid and very important medical reasons. And so what do I hear during the day? I hear people saying, it's the pro-druggies. It's like they had bricks dropped on their head out there. I don't know what's the matter with these people. They don't listen. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes. Welcome back. We sure missed you, Art.
Well, I'm glad to be back. Where are you?
This is a fiddler in South Bend, Indiana, and I have a potential report. I will let you evaluate this. There's a petting zoo up here, and I'm getting a little breathless here. Anything I get on the air. There was 14 animals killed. Now, the TV report originally said that they were shot with a small caliber rifle. Puncture wounds, okay?
What?
And, yeah. This is in South Bend, Indiana. It's a small petting zoo.
Yeah.
And these animals were supposed to have been 14 of them were dead.
Yeah.
No goats and this sort of thing.
Yes.
And then the veterinarian got in on the act, and they're saying, well, gee, we're not so sure. We think it was a pack of dogs.
What kind of conclusion?
I have got mine.
What kind of puncture wounds?
That is what I can't understand. You see, it went from a small caliber rifle to a pack of wild dogs.
There is... Oh, come on.
No, dogs... our local TV, Channel 16 WND up here.
Dogs, sir, when they attack, rip flesh.
Right, right. See, there's something a little anomalous here.
Yes, there is.
And I thought you'd like that. I wouldn't use the name that you're going to name.
I'm not afraid of it. Chupacabra.
Yes, sir. Now, this is the conclusion I drew. I would like to have some people from South Bend call. Of course, we didn't get a report on something like this. I'm scared. I got a big old husky Malamute.
Well, now
let him out of the yard.
Okay,
now.
let us ask you, was there a South Bend newspaper article about it?
I don't know. This came over WNDU, which is, you know, on the Vatican, which is the
right.
Vatican satellite, and they reported, I think, you know, several different times, and there has a report degenerated from a bunch of, you know, vandals.
Gotcha.
All of a sudden, the veterinarian said, well, gee, it must be coyotes or wild dogs.
Uh-huh. All right. Thank you very much. I will try and follow up on that. Just by your getting that on the air, we will follow up on it. 14 animals with small puncture wounds that they originally thought to be a small caliber gun But then they began talking about dog attacks in a petting zoo? Sounds a little... A little fishy to me. How about you? So, if anybody can help us follow up on that, please. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. I'm Dory calling from San Francisco.
Hi, Dory.
Hi. I've had a question now going on for quite a few years since the 94 earthquake in Northridge.
Right.
And I believe that it's possible that my husband and I heard you a few days after that regarding the possibility of, you'll excuse me the terminology, but booms, like bonds, sonic booms, before the major jolt. And I've been, you know, on the net a couple times asking this question, has anyone heard about something like this?
Oh, hell yes. They've been getting booms in L.A. down to San Diego and south for several years now. Big, unaccountable booms. A lot of people think it may be the aurora headed back toward Area 51. A lot of people, but they just don't know.
I don't believe that. It's something about that kind of makes me a little bit skeptical. Is it possible if there was some, you know, testing going on possibly?
Of course it's possible.
And the other thing was, and I hear my husband in the background,
is he trying to help you? Or?
He's helping me out. He's listening to me while he's helping me.
I see.
The other thing was, right after, there was actually two major jolts that night, and we ran outside to the main house. His parents live in the main house, and saw a shooting star. Coincidence?
Maybe. Synchronicity?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I appreciate the call, but I'm not sure what to tell you. I don't know that I would necessarily connect a shooting star with a sonic boom. But on the other hand, something reentering the atmosphere frequently produces a sonic boom. The kind of sonic booms they've been getting in Southern California rarely have anything to do with anything reentering the atmosphere, at least any rock reentering the atmosphere, if you follow me. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, Arbel.
Hey there.
It's nice to have you back, bud.
It's good to be here.
Missed you a lot. Did you see that movie, Deep Impact?
I saw Deep Impact, and day before yesterday, I saw Armageddon.
Oh, did you like it?
Oh, I loved it.
Great.
I loved it.
Hey, I'm out in Eugene, Oregon. I just wanted to let you know I listen to you all the time, and I'm preparing for what's going to happen here. And,
preparing is a good idea whether it happens or not. Eventually, something is going to happen, obviously.
Yeah, just for change. I'm prepared for change.
Yep.
I love you, bud.
Good for you. Take care. Yeah, I meant to comment on that. I saw Armageddon with Bruce Willis, and I thought it was fantastic. Why? Because they were able to deal with the subject, which is more science reality than fiction, in a very serious way, but at the same time, do it with comedy. Now, I know that may not make sense, and it won't until you see the movie, but they did that. They actually combined successfully an extremely serious topic like Armageddon with humor. Sounds impossible, I know, but when you've seen it, you'll know what I mean. Until then, I guess I'll never be able to explain it. But see it. It's a good movie, Armageddon, Bruce Willis. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Thank you.
From the Kingdom of Nye, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. From east of the Rockies, call Art at 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, at 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may fax Art at area code 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It's
now again, here's Art.
Thank you. It certainly is what I was going to say, interrupting my announcer as usual. Brilliant, huh? Good morning, everybody. Listen, with regard to the studio cam, I've got three cameras here that will take pictures of me about every 30 seconds. Sometimes I turn them off. You know, instead of sitting in front of a camera for 5 hours, every now and then I turn them off, you know, and for a little privacy, for whatever you imagine I might want to have privacy for. Most of the time, though, I leave them on, so I'll try and leave them on more. And I'll turn them on again here in a moment. But every now and then, I get email. When I turn them off, my God, my mailbox fills up with, well, your camera's not updating. Well, that means I've turned it off. Occasionally, I do that. Anyway, welcome back. We're into open lines. Anything you want to talk about, fair game. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, hello. My name is George.
George?
Mm-hmm.
Where are you, George?
I'm calling from New York City.
I almost detected that in your voice. George in New York City. Well, anyway, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I have an experience that I had a long time ago when I was at summer camp.
Summer camp. We all had some kind of strange experience in summer camp.
It was like a UFO-like experience, I could tell you that.
I too had some strange experiences at summer camp. We could do a whole show on that one night. So you saw something anyway, huh?
Oh, these strange different lights, and everyone else in the cabin was sleeping, but I was the only one awake. Because I'm the type of person who tends to rise earlier than other people if I go to bed at a certain time, you know.
And so you saw lights?
These very strange lights, and they were in different shapes, and I forgot how many of them there were. Some were straight and some were round, and some were like rounded lights stuck together in a straight line in a stick-like fashion. And one of them, and they made this strange noise.
Well, George, let me assure you, my friend, you are not the only one who has seen things of that nature. And as I said, we could do a whole show on summer camp. Really, for a lot of children, that's the first extended period of time away from home. And it is emotionally very, very stressful. I remember summer camp. I was bound and determined to hate it. But then I actually began to lie. It was like boot camp in the military, Air Force. Only in that case, I really did hate it. Only now, looking back on it, was it okay. On the international line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. It's Jesse in British Columbia.
Hi, Jesse.
I just wanted to tell you a couple of things. Actually, one, I was thumbing through my music magazine, and lo and behold, here's an album called Chupacabra.
There is one, yes.
Yes, by a lady named Imani Coppola.
Right.
I thought that was really cool.
You're on a portable phone, aren't you?
Yes, I am, and I can't do anything about it because it's the only phone I have.
Well, then stay close to your base.
Okay, I'm moving.
See, that's the portable phone rule.
Okay, well.
See, now everybody can hear the difference.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm half deaf anyway, so it makes no difference to me. The one thing I wanted to kind of point out, they were talking about that I can't remember the name of it, the program that detects a lie in a person's voice.
Oh, yes, Truster, thank you.
You know, you hear a lot of discussion about whether it works or not and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to hear is some discussion on the morality of even using it.
Okay, we'll do that. You're absolutely right. Look, I'll tell you from my own experience right now, it works. Now, the morality of using it is entirely a different question. And in my case, for example, I've got it here on my computer.
I've got it wired into my board. I did that when I had the guest on. But I have not used it. Not on callers, not on guests, and I'm not going to. And I have been, believe me, I've been urged to. But I'm not going to. And I guess that has to do with the morality of using it. I guess in a way, I think that it would affect the program I do. I want to listen to people, and I want to try and be the judge of the truth and a lie myself. Now, this in no way lessens my belief in the truster, because I believe it really works. No, I know it works. I simply think that it would be a terrible impediment to doing this show properly. And so I have chosen not to do it. Not to you, not the callers, not the guests, not anybody. So there's a big issue about the truster. Any of the rest of you see that program? I'm sorry I missed it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, my name's James. I'm from Merrill, Oregon.
Yes, James.
Yeah, first of all, that caller that you just had a couple calls ago,
right?
From New York?
Yes.
I believe that to be the Jerky Boys.
I beg your pardon?
There's this group of people that make CDs where they crank call people and try to make funnies on the air.
Really?
And do weird things like that, and I think that they just hit you.
Oh, well. Could be.
Oh, yeah, but the point of interest I wanted to make, in the news, I was up at about 4 o'clock one morning, and I heard that Yugoslavia, was it Pakistan, I'm sorry, was planning on nuking India.
That's right.
New Delhi.
That's right.
And
there was a
very, very brief.
There was, there was a defector.
Oh, there was?
Oh, yes. And the defector revealed the plans that Pakistan, he claimed, had to initiate a nuclear strike.
Hmm.
Now, that may have led to the quick testing of nuclear weapons by India.
Yes.
And then the follow-up by Pakistan of also testing.
Yeah, that's just causing problems.
So I don't necessarily doubt that. I consider that to be well within the realm of possibility. And if so, then it gives you a great understanding about why India did some quick tests.
It's sparking a lot of tension.
No doubt about it. I appreciate the call. Yeah, look, it could happen. And you can sit here and think that right now it has not happened, because the very same thing is in effect that was in effect between the U.S. and the old USSR, and that is the MAD principle, mutual assured destruction. Once they're both sure they've got the weapons, and they know exactly what they'll do because they have tested them, then they're less likely to be used. On the other hand, if just one side has them, now I don't have to go through this with you, you know how it works, right? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello? Going once, going twice, gone. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Star?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Good, good. I'm loving your program. I tuned into it a few months ago, and I just can't get enough of it.
Thank you. Where are you?
I'm in New York City, so
also
I'm pretty late right now.
All right. You think that was one of the Jerky Boys on there from New York City a minute ago?
I don't know. Could be, but, you know, I wouldn't worry about it if I were you.
I'm not.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention, that story about the CNN book about the sarin gas in Vietnam. I also kind of, you know...
Actually, Laos.
Excuse me? You're right. Actually, right, in Laos, where they went after defectors in Laos. I kind of, you know, my antennas went up, too, when I started hearing that CNN was retracting the story and getting rid of people.
Right.
I just thought to myself right away, oh, man, that, you know, the powers, you know, the people, you know, powers that be got to them and just put some pressure on them, you know? And now they're just, you know, starting to retract stuff and getting rid of people. But I'm inclined to believe that it could have happened.
I am as well.
Before, you know, I go, I was wondering...
Wait a minute. That's a long reach, and I want to be very careful here. When the story first came out, I said, oh, my God, this is the last thing I want to believe, and I'm not going to believe it until I see proof. Now, that was my first blush reaction to it, because there's still a little piece of me that wants to believe that we're not that bad.
Right.
The second view was when they began retracting the story, then my antenna, as you point out, went up, and now I've got one of the reporters that was fired, And I'm sure I'm going to get in trouble for it, but I don't care. I'm going to have the guy on the air.
Right. Oh, I think you should.
And it is his view that, believe me, it is his view. The story is real.
Right.
So we'll see.
Just one favor, if I could ask you. I'm not on the net yet. I'm not online, as you said. Could you give me a mailing address for you?
Sure. Do you have a pencil?
Yeah.
Okay. It is Art Bell, of course.
Uh-huh.
P.O. Box. 4755.
4755.
In a little town called Pahrump.
Pahrump, spell it?
Can you spell it?
P-A-R-E-N-T?
P-A-H-R-U-M-P.
R-U-M-P, oh, Pahrump.
Yes, Nevada. Okay. Zip code 89041.
89041?
Right, dash 4755.
And what, I didn't get the estate. Pahrump where?
Nevada.
Nevada, I'm sorry. Okay.
The Silver Estate, where we have machines and gambling and stuff.
All right.
All right?
Thank you very much.
You take care. New York City again. And our friends, WABC. I shouldn't sing that. I can't sing. Wild Card Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, Mr. Bell. Yeah, I want to say, like, a few months ago, you had Richard Hoagland on, and you was talking about the fact that the International Space Station will be quarantined. You remember that?
Quarantined?
Yeah, you said, like, the space program will be quarantined.
That Earth is virtually quarantined. There were people suggesting that Earth has been quarantined and that somebody, somewhere, told us, don't leave the planet anymore.
Right, that's what I mean, right.
Yes, mm-hmm, yeah.
Here's the point I'm trying to make. A few days ago, weeks ago, Russian space station Mir, they're going to disband, they're going to get rid of the space station Mir. You heard of that?
Yeah, they're going to re-enter it.
And I just want to know, what is your take on that? And, like, is that a connection between what Richard Hoagland was saying and that, or that has nothing to do with it? Because I know they're going to get
ready. I would, all right, listen, I would suggest it has nothing to do with it, but who knows? The Mir is getting old and rickety and dangerous. And the Russians don't have the money to maintain it properly. So under the circumstances, it looks like Mir is headed for an early death. And they're going to bring it in over the Pacific and let it burn up. And that's what they're probably going to do. On top of that, the Russians claim now they do not have enough money to take care of their portion of the International Space Station. And I'm kind of wondering if we are going to pony up the money and give it to the Russians so they will have enough money so they can be part of the International Space Station. And I think that's... Call the Wild Card Lines, area 702-727-1295. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, I'm... You calling from Marker Heights, Texas?
Where's... Texas?
Yeah.
All right, welcome.
Hi. I was just wondering, is there, like, any chance to be able to get you overseas besides the Internet?
No, we're not on shortwave yet. It's something we've always contemplated, but with the Internet becoming so strong worldwide, it almost has become a moot subject. In other words, we really almost don't need shortwave. Why can you not get the Internet?
Because in Germany, they charge you, like, a lot of money for... Within the city calls, because it's where my husband will be stationed.
Well,
I don't think AFN is going to play.
Well, let me give you a little hint, all right? And here it is. Even in Germany, you can get an access number for AOL.
Mm-hmm.
And go in at AOL rates.
Mm-hmm.
That's one access to the Internet. Now, when you go in through, you know, a typical IP server in Germany, you're going to get, it's going to cost you a lot of money. But if you go in through AOL, I think it's quite reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I might just try that.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot. You got to get a good show.
You take care. And when are you going to Germany?
Next month.
Next month.
At the 10th.
Well, enjoy it.
I am from Germany, so.
All right. Then you will enjoy it. Take care.
I will. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, good evening, Art.
Good evening.
Good morning, I should say. Fred in Chula Vista and Cogo.
Yes, sir.
And a month ago, I bought an ATS-909, and
yes,
I got to tell you, my hat is off to the engineers that designed this radio.
Yeah, and that's something.
I mean, it is extremely complex capabilities and yet amazingly simple to operate.
That's right.
And the AM section's good, the FM, good sound on the headphones with the stereo.
I know, it's superb.
And with the wire antenna,
I know.
You just pick up the signal, even in the middle of the afternoon.
I know, if you really want to have some fun, string out about 60 feet of wire and watch what happens.
I've been thinking about doing that, just to see what I would get on 60 meters of wire. So.
Okay, you will experience about a 300% improvement.
Okay, I'm going to have to try that. But I tell you, though, the commercial does not do the radio justice.
I try.
That's awfully...
Yeah, I know. I try. I mean, I tell people that it simply is the best portable in the world right now, and of course it is. But there is no way to quite impart how good it is until you have it in your hot little palm.
That is so true. And I just, the Sea Crane people, they're so good to deal with.
Well, thank you very much. And I, you know why? I'll tell you why. Because it is a company dedicated to selling the best. And they have never left that original business principle to sell the best. Either the best for the money or the best, period. Both categories. And they still adhere very, very, very stringently to that. And they're a good company to deal with. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, good evening, Art. How you doing?
I'm fine. Where are you?
I'm out in Crystal Lake, Illinois.
All right.
Good. My question is on touching back into spirituality, which you're talking about earlier today. I was wondering if you're ever going to have Guy Finley back on your show.
Who?
Guy Finley.
Oh, Guy Finley. I would imagine so, yes.
Good, good, because the reason I started listening to you was back in February, I'm a member of Ken Roberts' course, and I heard you do his little commercial. That's what really turned me on to your show, and I gotta say, it's very enlightening. I drive a truck all night long, and it really lets me have a good evening while I drive.
Ah, yes, I detect you're in a truck right now.
Yep. Well, you have a good evening.
All right, thank you very much. Take care. A lot of truckers out there. We're going to do a night with truckers one night. I don't know when it's going to be exactly, but we're going to do that, as we are going to do a board op show pretty soon, too. A lot of things in the works. We're also going to do a confession line. That's going to be pretty soon. Maybe later on in the week. Not sure. I thought a confession line would be fun. What do you think would happen if I open a line and I just give people an opportunity to confess something they have never told anybody else, something they really want off their chest? Be fun. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
This is Mark from Lake Oswego, Oregon.
Hi, Mark.
I have two questions for you.
Okay.
One, about your website.
Yes.
I've been trying to find this out for quite a long time now. I think back in February, you had someone on who was talking about wormholes and like relativity.
That would be Professor Michio Kaku from New York City University.
You happen to know the date that was on so I can listen to it from the internet?
No, I don't, but I just gave you the name, so if you browse through the the programs and find that name, that's it.
So that was who again?
Dr. Michio Kaku.
Michio Kaku.
Okay.
Okay.
That'll be it. So when you find that, you have struck gold. Call toll-free 1-800-618-8255. Uh-oh, Mike, you just committed the sin.
That's it.
We're not allowed to give last names on the air.
Okay.
So let's just go with Mike in Houston.
Yes.
Okay.
I just woke up and you said something about the great some activity in Mount, was it Sicily or whatever it is over there in Italy?
Yes.
Oh, you also mentioned Vesuvius and Pompeii.
That's right.
Are you familiar with the Edgar Cayce prophecy?
Yes, I am.
Vesuvius and Pompeii?
I am, yes.
The greater activities, it says if there are greater activities in Vesuvius or Pompeii, then the southern coast of California and the areas between the Salt Lake and the southern portions of Nevada.
Yes.
They expect within 3 months, following the same, an inundation caused by earthquakes.
Pompeii, Vesuvius, Etna, Poco down in Mexico, Montserrat in the Caribbean, they're all active now.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize Vesuvius and Pompeii were active.
Yep.
I thought they were dormant for quite a few years.
They were.
Okay. Because I check the earthquake report pretty frequently on the internet, and I just have it. My computer's been down for about a week or so, and I didn't realize they were active again.
Well, they just began to get active.
I'll be doggone.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So a lot of volcanism going on all at once. Coincidental? Synchronistic? I have for a long time, and there are a lot of geologists, of course, who would go through the roof, not all of them, like not a Berkland, for example, but there are a lot of geologists who would go through the roof at my thinking. And my thinking is that they are all connected, that the magma within the Earth and the pressures have some connection. And so you see them becoming active all at once. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Brian in Sacramento.
Hello, Brian.
Hi. I was wondering what the issue of Newsweek that article is in.
The one that came out today. Monday.
Monday. And
so, in other words, if you go to the newsstand, say, tomorrow or today, it should be there.
Okay. And I had another question. How much room does a year's worth of food take up?
It would take up about half of an, maybe a third of an average closet.
Oh, really? Is that all?
Yeah.
Okay, I pictured it taking up a lot more than that.
No, that would be a year's supply of food.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you very much.
Take care. Now, you've got to remember, it is packed very, very carefully. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art. This is Jack calling you from Des Moines.
Hi, Jack.
Y2K question for you, Art.
Sure.
I realize the federal government's not going to have much of a reach after the event. However, I think they may have the potential to give us some problems in the latter part of 99. I'm wondering, in your opinion, do you see that happening, and do you see Bill Clinton invoking these alleged cyber terrorism executive orders because of that?
Interesting question. I'm not sure yet. I think the Y2K problem is absolutely real.
Yes.
I think that it could lead to some executive action. And I think that if you've listened to some of the questions at news conferences lately with Bill Clinton, he has alluded to the fact that it really is a serious problem and they're judging it. So they're studying very carefully and judging what they're going to do. So, yeah, I mean, It could happen.
Right.
I don't know if that comforts you or not, but...
Well, I just can foresee some problems in the latter part of 99. But we'll just have to see and put away our supply of food and just put our heads down and get ready to go.
I agree. Appreciate the call, sir. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Right. Get ready. The latter part of 99, no matter what happens, is going to be really, really interesting.
Talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. To reach Art from outside the U.S., first dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Actually, I'm just calling for information.
Information.
Right.
Okay, well, I'll see what I can do.
I listened to the best of Sunday.
Yes.
And Mr. Gary North was the subject.
Ah, yes.
And he had given us a web address, and I missed it. I just got in.
Well, what you do is you go to my my website.
Right.
And you look in the web links section, and you will find it.
All right. So you're linked right straight to Gary?
Why, sure.
That's excellent. Well, thank you very much.
I thank you.
Show. It's a great show.
Thank you, my friend. There are a lot of people who sort of overlook that. They're looking for a link to a guest we have had. Well, we have a links site, a very extensive link site on my website. You go down to the bottom and just find the links page and go over there and look for what you want. You'll find it. Click on it, and away you go. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. You know, I think this sarin gas story is kind of relevant to your guest who talked about people of goodwill sometimes within sinister organizations like the mass media, the corporate big business, military-industrial, CIA-penetrated media, sometimes coming through with some honorable story like this, but then you see what happens. They get attacked. I would recommend a book called Unreliable Sources and a magazine called Extra, because it shows that, in effect, these corporations have been, you know, their whole bias and their whole impulse is alliance with the military-industrial complex, a cozy relationship with the military.
Well, I don't deny that it could be, nor do I say that it was. I don't know one way or the other. I want to have this gentleman who was fired on, and I'll probably get in a lot of trouble for that. But I would also like to invite either somebody from CNN or Time to be on as well. I would like to hear it thrashed out, wouldn't you?
Well, what I think we ought to have is more people like this, because I think if you read, for instance, in this issue of Extra Magazine, they pointed out that Time Magazine, far from being some kind of a liberal, in the case of the expose of the CIA contra drug smuggling operation,
mm-hmm.
A senior editor at Time Magazine was quoted by one of Time's major investigative reporters who came up with similar evidence of the CIA contra drug smuggling. He said, we're going to kill your story about CIA contra drug smuggling because Time Magazine supports the Contras. If you could come up with some kind of a story implicating the Sandinistas, we'd publish it right away. There's also another quote by the editor of Extra who talked to the one of the top reporters at the New York Times, and he said, why haven't you brought out any of this information that has been provided about this some of these CIA operations? And the reporter told him, he didn't even deny that they were true. He said, if that information got to the public, it would destroy the republic. In other words, here's a definition of the republic as the CIA shadow warriors, the military-industrial complex, which organs like the New York Times and the Washington Post have been documented in this book as collaborating with secretly over the decades, on the one hand, peddling all kinds of disinformation against those on the CIA hit list, like the Soviet Union or the Sandinistas or Cuba, but on the other hand, covering up all of the dirty operations of the Central Intelligence Agency.
All right, sir. Well, I don't necessarily disagree with you, nor do I acknowledge it is all true. I really don't know. I suspect a great deal of it is true. I think there was a great deal of drug running that occurred during the Contra operation. I'm not certain that it was officially sanctioned, as in black budget kind of sanctioning. I'm not really sure about that one. It's possible. I think more likely a lot of pilots simply decided they were going to make profit, and they hauled guns in one direction and drugs in the other. So I acknowledge it certainly is possible, and with regard to the CNN Time story, I'm going to have this gentleman on, and then I'd be glad also to have somebody on from CNN. They apologized profusely for it. Why? Because it was not true, or because they received pressure from on high? We'll try and find out. This is the way I know to do it. Jack Smith was a 20-year CBS reporter, definitely a heavyweight, researched the story. This was to be his retirement great story just before retiring, and then he got canned. So
We'll investigate it. I don't know what to believe. I'll know more of what to believe after I listen, as will you. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Arben, how you doing?
I'm doing.
All right, good. It's Ken from Cali.
Yes, sir.
One question or even suggestion for a future show.
Sure.
With all the talk of the increase of ultraviolet rays due to the pathogens.
Well, no, the ultraviolet rays are due to the diminution of the ozone.
Okay. I thought I recall Richard Hoagland said that the pathogens left from hail bout.
No. You're getting guests mixed up.
Okay.
The pathogen story came from Ed Dames.
Ed Dames.
Uh-huh.
All right. Okay. Well, with the increase of the UV rays, let me get it simple. one thing that I haven't really heard anything about was the biological subject of melanin and how it deals with UV rays and how it converts it actually into, vitamin C?
Really?
Yeah. And I find it quite amazing that the sun actually controls melanin. And there's a lot of guests, there's a lot of people who are experts on melanin, and it's just really rarely talked about. And I think that melanin is one of the probably the biggest suppressed biological subjects in the world.
Well, not here. And if we can get a good guest, somebody... in science, who can explain the relationship and how we can benefit from it, I'd be glad to have them on. I'm simply not scared of anything. Dangerous, huh? Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, good morning, Art. This is Dan in Virginia.
Hello, Dan.
Hey, that was a great replay you had on Doug Ruby.
Oh, glad you enjoyed it. Absolutely riveting, wasn't it?
Yeah, I tell you, this man's probably got a lot more information because it's been about a year. And he could probably give us some really good insight.
I agree. Well, what I think I will do, Dan, is to wait until the season is over. It's underway full swing in Britain right now. If you want to go up to my website, you can see what's occurring. There are some incredibly intricate, incredibly fascinating crop circle designs appearing in England. And after this season, I think we'll find out what Doug knows.
Oh, that'd be terrific. Also, I'd like, what do you think about Stan Dale and what kind of activity we're having now with the volcanoes?
I think I would love to talk to Stan, thank you. But Stan is in the process of moving in Australia right now. So as soon as he becomes settled, establishes his internet connection, and we can connect again, and I can get a new phone number and all that for him, why, we'll have Stan back on. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
This is Rich in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yes, sir.
I've been listening to the different people you've had on making predictions, like the Kirkwoods and Scallion and
right.
Opie Elders and
right.
Ed Dames and
right.
Sean Martin.
Yes.
And there's a lot of agreement between them, but also there's some disagreement. One will say it's a comet or comet's coming, another solar flares,
mm-hmm.
another pole shift, but disagree on if it's going to be a magnetic shift or a physical shift. And
that's right.
Say California is going in the ocean, the other one says it isn't.
That's right.
Another one will say Pakistan and India will have a nuclear exchange, another North Korea and South Korea and the like. I was wondering if it would be a good idea to tabulate all these statements and try to find the differences and the ones that are the same. See just how much agreement and disagreement there is.
Well, I think that's what we do. Thank you. On the program. In other words, as you listen to these various guests, it's kind of up to you to decide whether you're putting together something that makes sense in a thread through the various predictions, and there is a lot of that, or whether they are so different that they, in effect, negate each other. That's up to you as an audience. However, I think most people, maybe most of my listeners, know that something is imminent, that something is close. I don't think there's any question about that. I think that you should be keeping track of what they say. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. No, now you're on the air. Good morning.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I have two quick comments about a couple of callers earlier. The first about Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
About their standoff.
Yes, well, there was the story, as we discussed earlier, that Pakistan had plans to attack India.
Yeah, well, in between us and USSR, or Russia, we would know if they launched and vice versa, but in Pakistan and in that situation, one could launch and the other one wouldn't know until it was hit. They don't have...
The problem is, sir, that there's about 3 or 4 minutes runtime for a missile to get from Pakistan to India or India to Pakistan. Now, when you think back on the events as they occurred with regard to the testing, it was no coincidence. And that's why I tend to believe this story that Pakistan actually had attack plans. If, for example, our CIA or the KGB or any other intelligence organization in the world detected that fact, detected that Pakistan indeed had plans to launch missiles, nuclear-tipped missiles, against India, what do you think they would do? What do you think an intelligence organization would do? Well, I'll tell you. I think they would tip off India. And I think India's reaction would be to conduct immediate nuclear testing to, in essence, serve notice to Pakistan that they are prepared to return in kind any attack. Am I right? I think I am. Now, we, of course, are not going to be told that was the case, but I bet it was. I bet one intelligence organization or another, you know, you may recall that there was a great controversy about how we were all caught by surprise, how the CIA had no idea that there was about to be testing in India. I'm not so sure. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art, how you doing?
Okay.
This is Jerry calling from Phoenix on KFYI.
Yes,
they
sir.
Play the first hour last. I hope enough people call in to get them to play the first hour first.
Well, you know why they do that.
I know why they do that, because they got Ken Hamlin on.
No, they do that because twice a year we shift our time out here, and in Arizona, they do not.
Uh-huh.
So for half the year, you get the first hour first, and for half the year, you don't.
Uh-huh.
There is no good solution to it.
All righty. Well, what I wanted to call and tell you was I would support your idea to go on the ham radio bands on the with your show.
No. You don't put commercial broadcasting on ham bands.
Well, what is
you can put it on shortwave. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant, shortwave.
Okay.
Yeah, with the Y2K stuff coming up and everything, it might be the only way you're going to get out.
Well, if we had to, we could get it on shortwave very quickly. And I can assure you that if the regular broadcast means went down, we would make every effort to be up on shortwave.
Are you going to publish your frequency?
Well, sure.
How would you do that?
Well, we would try and do... Look, I think if this Y2K thing comes, it's going to come in stages, and we're going to get warnings. You follow me? We're going to start to see things crumble. It won't all happen exactly instantaneously.
I see what you're saying. Makes sense.
Yeah.
All righty. Love your show.
I think so. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And take care. Yeah, I think it would occur... There would be warnings. For example, soon now, I think we'll begin to see the warnings. Next year, we'll begin to see the warnings. And if it looks as though it's going to really manifest itself, then we would obviously begin to take steps to try and continue talking to you however we could do it. And one good means would certainly be shortwave, wouldn't it? Stay right where you are. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Where have Carlo gone? Left sweet pride. Her hands are never cold. She's got better days inside. She'll turn the music on.
Call Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye on the Wild Card Line at area code 702-727-1295. That's area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
You know, I think more relevant words were never sung. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. I've got a kind of an interesting tax here. Hey, Art, I saw the Truster segment on Dateline last night. It was kind of funny how they used it and how they didn't. They ran an old Tricky Dick Nixon clip through it, one of his denials of any knowledge of a cover-up in the Watergate break-in. He flunked the truthfulness test. But they didn't subject Slick Willie Clinton's veracity to the Truster. One perfect denial statement of his to test would, of course, be his look. I'm only going to say this one more time. I did not have sexual relations with that woman. Wow, what television that would have made. But they blew it. Why, Art? Well, why do you think? You can really answer your own question. The political heat for that would be too much for them. No guts. I would have done it. I could do it. Maybe I will do it. See, I have the advantage of not caring. You know what I mean? I just really don't care. If it's interesting to do, I will do it. And I will keep doing it until it finally gets me in so much trouble, they don't let me do it anymore. So that would be my assessment. No guts. All right, it hardly seems to me the program could be on its last leg this night. In other words, in the final segment, I don't know what happened at the time. So much I wanted to tell you, and so much that occurred while I was gone, and I guess we're just going to have to get to it as we can. West of the Rockies, you're on air. Hi.
Yeah, this is Stu in Phoenix.
Hello, Stu.
Yeah, first of all, welcome back. Thank you.
It's always great to be back.
Yeah, about a month ago, you had a caller from Phoenix who referred to this town as Ground Zero.
That's right.
Yes, and at that point, you expressed some concern about causing people in Phoenix to freak out.
Right.
I just want to let you know that worrying about that is an exercise in futility. Ranks right up there with sending your cat to obedience school.
Well, when he said Ground Zero, he meant in terms of, for example, the Phoenix sightings and all that kind of stuff. He didn't mean nuclear Ground Zero.
Yeah, yes, I'm aware of that.
Okay.
But a couple of things you have to remember. First of all, it's always a full moon in Phoenix. And second thing, there's only two kinds of people here, crazy and stupid.
Right now, the stupids
are in the majority, which accounts for Mayor Rimza being in office. Also helps to account for Senator McCain.
You even throw in Senator McCain, huh?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well,
a couple of dumb things lately.
Oh, well, it is, let's see, I'm going to try and be kind to Phoenix and say that it is a real happening place.
Well, it sure happened earlier tonight. We had our first real monsoon storm and then knocked everything galley west.
Yep, I know. It, of course, is that time of year. But I can, let me tell you something. It is so dark where I am that I can look to the south and east, and I can see the flashes of lightning from here.
Mm-hmm.
Not the actual bolts, but I can see the horizon lighting up.
Yes. Yeah, oh, one other thing. You mentioned last week, I think it was, that you've had a lot of wind in Nevada lately.
Oh, yes.
And I can explain that, too. That's because Utah sucks and California blows. I read that on a men's room on the truck stop.
Goodbye, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I won't comment on that. They're happening places. West of the Rockies, you're on air. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Did you hear any talk about this Y2K problem among the French while you were in Paris?
First of all, I don't speak French.
Uh-huh.
The first problem. Nor do I read French, except an occasional word.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, I didn't. And actually,
I was wondering, you know, what's their slant on this thing?
Oh, they're very, very, very much aware of it. For the most part, other countries are far, far behind the U.S., which is far behind anyway. Take the Russians, for example. They've got lots of nuclear plants, right?
Uh-huh.
They are not going to do anything about Y2K until the year 2000. Now, how warm and fuzzy does that make you feel?
Well, the whole thing is worrisome. That's all I can say.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. Can you imagine that? The Russians, because of monetary concerns, are going to, quote, wait and see what happens, end quote. Now, there's a policy for you. When they've got nuclear reactors running on non-compliant computer systems that are old anyway, and you can almost be assured, in fact, they conducted one test at a nuclear plant. You know what happened? Everything locked up. So their official policy is going to be, we're going to wait and see what happens. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Is this Art Bell?
It is.
Hi, my name is Kay from Las Vegas, 105.1 Hot Talk Radio.
That's the way to do it.
I went down as soon as your show started tonight, and you mentioned the penthouse in the Newsweek articles.
Oh, yes.
I went down to 7-Eleven and picked them up. I found your penthouse article. I'm going to read it as soon as the show's over, but I can't find you in the Newsweek, the July 6th one.
No, it's not the July 6th one.
Oh.
See, the way it works is they're 1 week ahead. They're always 1 week ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in the next one, July 6th plus 1 week.
Okay, so I'll pick up that when it comes out. I love your show.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care. You may have gone down a little soon. They may not get it until Tuesday or Wednesday. Who knows? But magazines tend to stay. For example, the issue of Penthouse that you picked up is August. Not July, but August. They always stay a little bit ahead. And the one in Penthouse is gigantic, gigantic article. Just goes on and on and on and on. Incredible article, actually. The one in Newsweek I have not seen yet, but I am told it is there in the new issue. So I'll take a look and see what you think. Close to the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Bingo, you're on.
My name is Pierce from Roswell, New Mexico.
Yes, sir.
I was wanting to wish Mr. Bell, glad that he's back from Europe.
Well, this is me.
Oh, is it? Okay. Well, let me see. I had a couple of questions, some follow-ups.
Sure.
One was about Madman Markham. Had you heard anything additional about him?
Not a word.
Not a word.
And I have tried and tried and tried.
Well, that's kind of spooky.
Yep.
Another one was I found on your website the recording of the guy who flew into Area 51.
Right.
Do you ever know what became of him?
Absolutely not. And
absolutely
it's not like
not.
You can't pick up the phone and call Area 51.
Right.
It's not like you can call 702 area code information and ask for Area 51's number. So,
had you received any more faxes from, I think her name was Julie?
Absolutely nothing.
Huh. That's very strange. Other than that, what do you think about the latest government reports about Roswell, and they keep trying to put it to rest?
Well, they're not doing a very good job.
Yeah.
That would be my comment. The Air Force, of course, had that press conference where that poor colonel was trotted out, and I think they did more harm to their cause than good.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion. Poor Colonel Haynes. Remember Colonel Haynes? I always joked at the time that I could almost imagine the conversation that went on before poor Colonel Haynes, I call him poor Colonel Haynes, had to come out and tell his time compression story. I mean, you just know he was appointed to come out and do this job, right? Some general munching on a cigar in there. I said, well, Colonel, you can do your part for the country. You're going to have to go out there and tell them about tell those people about time compression. Why, tell them that the stories, they changed with time compression. You don't have to tell them what time compression is, Colonel. It's a passage of time. It compresses. That's all you need to say, Colonel. But, General, what's time compression? Doesn't matter, boy. Go on out there and tell it. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art, this is Jeff from Spokane.
Yes, sir.
And just wondering, I'm going to change the topic just a little bit. I got a little teaser I throw at friends of mine during parties sometimes.
Yes.
If you could invite five people to a dinner party, assuming you speak the same language, but these people at this time are dead, give me your five.
Five dead people?
Yeah.
Five dead people.
Just eliminate as opposed to people that are currently alive.
It's really hard.
Hey, I'll listen to you.
You're going to have to give me some time on that.
No problem.
Can you do that?
You betcha.
All right. Thank you.
You bet.
Take care. Now, you're going to have to give me a little bit. Five dead people. Be hard enough to come up with five alive people. Dead people. Boy. All right, let's see. I think I've got something that I've got to do here. Not exactly sure what it is. Well, that's what you get for throwing away your log. I know I'm a little bit behind. Let me see. Okay, I'll talk to the network. What is it that I'm missing? Okay, thank you. I can take care of that right away. Okay, east of the Rockies, your turn. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. This is Ron in Sioux Falls. Listen to the Crystal Award-winning KWSN Sioux Falls Talk Radio with an attitude.
Man, that's the way to do it.
How you doing?
Fine.
Oh, must have had an excellent trip. I haven't had a chance to see any of your pictures on the internet yet.
Well, when you do take a look, there's some really good ones. I took an Olympus digital camera over there, processed them right on the spot, and sent them back, and they were put up almost on a daily basis. It was really
That's what
cool.
I hear listening to your show.
Yeah.
Say, I was wondering, I saw something on the internet about Colonel Corso.
Yes.
Do you know if that's true and how he's doing?
He had a heart attack. The last I heard, he was in stable condition, which was amazing because of the massive nature of the heart attack.
I know. The first thing I heard, it didn't sound too good, but then I didn't hear anything more.
Well, I called his wife, and she told me he was in stable condition, so that's what I know.
Okay, that's great news.
It is, and the moment we can talk to him again, we will.
Okay, well, good show as always, and always listen to you while I'm working.
All right. Well, it makes the work go faster. I know that. Thank you. That's how I kind of fooled work, too. I used to listen to talk radio. Just makes time go by. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art Bell?
Yes, sir.
Hi, yeah. Well, I was going to ask you a bunch of questions, but I got them already answered from listening to your show, except for the one. You have that truth. What'd you call it? The truth?
The truster.
The truster.
Yep.
And did I understand you right that you do your old shows are on your website?
Absolutely.
Okay, I was just wondering if you could do this, because you haven't heard about that Area 51 flyer. If you could run that on him while he was talking.
I could run it on anybody, but I choose, with respect to the job I'm doing on the air here, to not do it.
Oh, you wouldn't do that?
Nope.
Oh, okay. I was just, because I'm sure a lot of people were wondering if that was a hoax or not.
Well, I'm sure they are, and what they can do is get the Truster software and do it themselves.
Okay, well, that's about it. Welcome back.
Right.
Great show.
Thank you. No, I made a conscious decision, and believe me, I thought it over very carefully, not to use it on you, the callers, or my guests, and I think that it was a wise decision. I think that it would make the show very, very, very difficult to do. And so there is a morality question with Truster. And even those people who invented it, and I interviewed the fellow who wrote the software in Israel. I interviewed the people in this country that are distributing the software. And even they admit there are obvious moral questions to be answered. I think there is no question about whether it works, but there are questions about its use. Wild Card Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Howard calling from
Howard, you're going to have to speak up. I can barely hear you.
This is, well, did you hear, I heard on the
use that the English insurance company will not take any claims against the Y2K problem. They said that everyone knew about it beforehand, so they have no responsibility for it.
Well, that's kind of like you're saying about cigarettes, right?
Yeah. So. But already a big insurance company in England doesn't want any to pay any liabilities.
Well, would you write a policy? Some Fortune 500 company came to you and said, look, we want $1 billion worth of insurance against a Y2K problem. Would you write that policy?
No.
Well, that's your own question.
So it shows it's a serious thing, because if these insurance companies aren't going to risk their money for it, that's a sign that it's going to be a big problem, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
No question about it. I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you. Of course, watch the insurance companies. And also watch the insurance companies with respect to earthquakes. Now, we all know that nobody can predict earthquakes, right? But when insurance companies begin massively canceling insurance in a certain area, pay attention. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. That must have been hard to do, especially on short notice like that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, Art. How was the weather in Paris, France?
Beautiful. We had a couple of cloudy days and a couple of rainy nights, but otherwise it was partly cloudy, mostly sunny, with occasional full sunny days. So it was beautiful.
No floods or anything?
No, they had those before I got there.
I'm calling from Atoka, Oklahoma.
Yes, sir.
I am the six-fingered alien hybrid.
Cool.
Have you received a package from a Mr. Smart?
Is that you?
No.
No.
If you look through your stuff, I'm sure you're way behind. There's a package there from a Mr. Smart in
And what's in the package?
Some information about the Hopi Elders, about certain star signs.
Look,
and
if you're a six-fingered alien, send me a photograph.
Well, I had the fingers removed when I was born.
What?
Yeah, they did it with my father and my grandfather and so on down the line, and with my children and my brothers and sisters.
Did you have six toes, too?
No, just six fingers.
Just six fingers. And so they were removed at birth?
Yes.
Like one might have the foreskin clipped?
Similar.
Mm-hmm.
You have the scars on my little fingers, as do my brothers and sisters.
Send me a picture of your scars.
Well, if you require that, I certainly will.
No, I don't require it. I'm just asking.
I mean,
it's quite a statement to make. I mean, how are we to believe? I mean, anybody can say I'm a six-fingered alien, and so is my dad, my granddad, and so forth and so on. But
I'm a hybrid of alien blood and human blood.
Now, how do you know that?
I am the fourth Antichrist and the true Messiah.
Really?
Yes.
You are really a busy guy.
Well, not quite so busy yet, but I will be shortly.
In other words, you're about to activate.
Well, we shall all see what we shall see.
Hmm.
I just hope the world pays attention and gets ready for what's coming, because if they don't, they will not survive.
All right. Well, look. My time is up for this program, and you'll be the first Antichrist that's had an opportunity to tell everybody good night.
Good night, America, and I hope you survive what is to come. I hope that you listen very carefully and prepare for what is to come so that you may survive it.
Thank you, Mr. Antichrist.
You're welcome, Art.
Good night. Well, there you heard it, straight from the devil's mouth, the Antichrist's mouth. Good night, America, in more ways than one. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell, indeed. Good night, all.